Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports in Depth of the show, and we open every show with John Coltrane, apropos, dear Lord, and we will now stop and pray. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. We thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. We thank you for being our God. And we thank you, dear Lord, and ask you to give us not what we want, what we need, and we need thee every hour. Dear Lord, we thank you for your darling son, Jesus, that died on the cross that we may have the right to the tree of life. We also want to thank you, Lord, that as the man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench, dear Lord. We ask you to continue to bless our families here and abroad. Bless our president. And more importantly, let your way be our way. And as a lady once said, you're God all by yourself. And although you may not be everybody's God, you are the one only true God. Bless the panel. Bless the panel's family. We ask you at this time, too, to bless the family of Whitney Houston as they're going through these troubled times. Any other people who have lost loved ones, not as famous, not as renowned, all be non-traveled God. And we end this prayer with the prayer you taught us. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive our trespasses. We forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thou art the King of power and glory forever. In your holy name, your Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports in Depth, with the show. Uh-oh. Here they come. Lady A and Rooney, Sports in Depth. When I got it. I don't know how I got it for the title. And the Negro Leagues, as we continue a little double hitter here. We going to salute the Negro League players as spring training is just among us here, and it's Black History Month, so I figured we'd consolidate that as well as getting Rooney on the line. And Rooney's carrying this mantle by himself of asking questions of how I got it and when I got it from my sports memorabilia. But we figured, have the First Lady of Sports here, and want to thank the First Lady of Blake Radio. I've been having some difficulties here, but Lady D came to the rescue. Doc, I'll handle it. So we want to thank her. She's also one that puts those great photographs in all of our shows. So we're going to take a hat off to her and always to Neil Blake for the work that he does. And those of you who, two connections for you, you want to make a donation to Blake Radio, www.blakeradio.com, www.blakeradio.com. Hit the first box and then you make a donation. And, of course, DocStanleySports.com is what this is all about today, my memory collection. And the tag words, Arthur Ashe, the first African-American man to win a Grand Slam tournament, and he won the U.S. Open when it had probably the greatest conglomeration of talent, as at one time the U.S. Open was an amateur event, and he won the first U.S. Open when it became open to pros and amateurs. John Patrick McEnroe, who I think is the Sugar Ray Robinson of tennis players, and we sent happy birthday to John yesterday, who celebrated a birthday. And it's John who's carried the mantle, the torch, and left the torch lit that Arthur's handed on. So we salute him, say happy birthday to him. And that's also another tag right, John McGraw. And as we talk about the Negro Leagues, you know, it was John McGraw who they said when he passed away, he had a list of names of all the black players he would have taken had he been allowed to take a black player. In fact, George Washington Stovey is the guy that started the whole thing. Stovey was the guy that was taken by the Giants. What had happened, and it's amazing that their name would be George Washington Stovey at that. But what had happened was, that's the other name I was looking for my byline. I looked, I went through here too, meant to put Rube Foster in there. But George Washington Stovey was a pitcher. In 1887, the New York Giants wanted to hire him. But another team said they wouldn't play against the Giants if they hired Stovey. After that, owners of all the teams made a deal. They agreed that nobody would hire black players. And Rube Foster, Andrew Rube Foster, was the man who started the Negro Leagues. Foster's mindset was this. They're not going to take one player. No. But they'll take a team. They'll accept the whole team. They'll play against the whole team. And they will not have to associate with the whole team. So his thinking was, he started the Negro Leagues with the mindset, when white America was ready for a black team, not a black player, he said, he'll have the team ready. And that was his thinking, that they would not take one player, as they did take Jack Roosevelt Robinson. I got an amazing story about it. I'm walking down the street the other day. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death with the show. How I got it? When I got it, Negro Leagues. I'm walking down the street 2 days ago. As I come up the stairs, I see a lady, and I know this lady. Right away, I know this lady. It's Rachel Robinson, Jackie Robinson's lovely wife. Hi, Mrs. Robinson, I say. She smiles and lights up. I give her a hug and a kiss. I say, oh, are you all right? She says, yes. You know, no, I'm not taking pain. She says, I'm going over to Bloomingdale's. And it hit me. I said, wow, let me get Miss Robinson for the show. I lost her in Bloomingdale's. She's such a pivotal part. You know, as I thought about it, you know, she is, as you look back, if Jackie is the father of integration in baseball, Mrs. Robinson is the mother. And so many stories were told of how her courage and the fact that she was there with Jackie was just so instrumental. And, you know, what they went through. And remains today, she's got to be in her 80s, just a lovely woman. And I tried to find her. And as we talk about the Negro Leagues, Buck Leonard is another name up there with Buck Leonard, who is seen as the Lou Gehrig of the Negro Leagues, or Lou Gehrig was seen as the Buck Leonard. And Buck Leonard, one of the greatest players ever played baseball. And he told me, by the grace of God, as a reflex on some of the memories, I met Tyson Page. And I remember.
Oh, my guy, Dr. Mel Smith Jr. here. How are you, Doc?
Mel Cosell. Yeah, you know, the Satchel Paige, I have the autograph in it too, and as Buck Leonard. Buck, Mr. Leonard told me, and I see him now, out at Shea Stadium when the late Jim Plummer, James Plummer, would have a Negro League Day. You know, the first Negro League Day ever done in New York City. The late Art Rush Jr. was the MC. Sonny Hyde, whose birthday was 2 days before before John McEnroe. Happy birthday to you, Sonny. I was up at Yankee Stadium covering a game, and Sonny was in the audience. Hyde is Sonny, one of the most highly decorated police officers in the history of New York City. Cracked some of the most unique crimes, drug-wise, and Mr. GQ. I mean, there's nobody that's been on the cover of GQ that dressed better than Sonny Hyde. And I was in the office, that's the good luck having. Sonny said, Mel, you know, maybe you can help us with this Black History Negro League thing. I said, yeah. He said, well, you know, maybe could you get Art to MC? I said, I'll talk to him. So he called a young lady, and she came in, and we worked together, and Art Russ MC'd it, and they gave all Chase Bank, if I'm correct, they gave all the guys a special commemorative jacket, but they only did it one time. They did it the one time. Charles Biot, Armando Vasquez, the late Armando Vasquez now, Jim Robinson, they were all there. But then Jim Plummer took it to another step. Not only would he have the guys there, a special Negro League, he'd have them in the lobby signing autographs, different sections, they'd be acknowledged at the ballpark, and he had a special suite upstairs for them and their families. They could watch the game, food, drink, everything, and then to take it to the Triple Crown level. Plummer, and I remember the first year he did it, and the guys were just, they couldn't believe it. Plummer had checks. He had money for all the players. He's long. He's a guy that came up in the Met organization as a bat boy, and goes without saying, it just shows you the great line from Harold Wester Jr., sad and touching, that when Jim Plummer died, the Met organization let the Negro League Day die too. When Plummer died, that was the end. And I just loved going over there. Carl J. Dent, who talked about Satchel Paige, he said he stepped against Satchel Paige and the ball looked like an aspirin tablet. Charlie Biot, Stanley Glenn, who caught Satchel Paige, Jim Robinson, just go on and on. My good friend Max Manning, as I'm wearing a cap here in the studio, Charlie Biot, Max Manning, Armando Vasquez, Jim Carter, Bo Wallace, Pee Wee Jenkins.
Let me ask you something, Doc. I heard something about the legend of Satchel Paige. I want to know if you can confirm it for me or not.
You're taking the thoughts out of my
mind. No confirmations, Mal. No confirmations from you.
Is that the Incredible Lady A?
The
yes,
one and
I've
only,
been
baby.
On the line waiting here.
Oh my.
What can you say? It's Lady A. And you know, I was getting ready to say a name, and when you came, Max Manning. And Max, I remember I met Mr. Manning, and I sent him a card one time, and he sent me a letter, which I have framed, and he just said how, you know, kind, and I love those guys. I remember Jim Robinson one time, we were upstairs, and one of the wives said, well, you know, she looked over at me, and she knew I was going to play. She said, who's that? And Jim said, who's that? She said, that's Doc Stanley. like I was somebody. And Max Manning told me, I just felt so good that the guy, that those players, my heroes, the guys who paved the way for so many of the players today, black and white, the guys who suffered and endured, the great talents who sometimes were never seen, and these guys embraced me and took me, and I became part of that family. And hey, man, when you come, I'd see there, man, and we the reunion, they'd hug, hey Doc, good to see you, and I just can't put in words of gratitude once again to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and Father God for the opportunity to meet these guys. And the story, Max told me this story, Mr. Manning. First, he told me two things. He said, you know, three things he told me. Biz Mackey, who was the mentor to Roy Campanella. Well, he said Biz Mackey told him when he first came, he said, look here, if you throw the ball where I tell you to, you can win this game. Now, Mackey was the mentor to Roy Campanella, the only catcher, African-American-wise, to win three MVPs, the first player to win three MVPs, and he hadn't not had the car injury, it's sort of concluded he'd at least won another one or two. And Biz Mackey was his mentor. The late, great Clayton Riley once told the story of Ty Cobb going to Cuba looking for Biz Mackey because all the white players knew these guys were superior to him. They used to pit the world champion white team against the Negro League All-Star team, and the Negro League All-Star team would always win. So they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put us an all-star team together and play them. And the Negro League still won 5 out of 7 games. So what they did, they stopped playing them. In an exhibition game, okay, against the white major leaguers, Satchel Paige struck out 21 batters.
Wow.
Not 13, not 17. Satchel Paige struck out 21. Joseph Paul DiMaggio, Art Rudd's friend, and who became my friend, I remember asking Mr. DiMaggio, I said, I read somewhere, Mr. DiMaggio, where you said you got a hit against Satchel Paige in an exhibition game, and when you got that hit, you knew you were ready for the big leagues. And he looked at me. I see him now. He says, yeah. And then he stopped and smiled at me. He said, but I tell you something. The older he got, the harder he was to hit. And Max told the story. He says, you know, when you see these documentaries and these movies and they show these parts where Statue is throwing a pitch of a bubblegum wrapper, Max said, that was true. He said, there were guys who could throw as hard as Satchel Paige. He said, but nobody had Satchel's control.
Well, that was part of what I was about to ask you, Doc. The one that I hear, he's not throwing over a gum wrapper. But this is part of the legend I heard, Doc. One day, supposedly, the owner of the team that he had played for, and he was As a matter of fact, when they brought him up, he was an old man. Then when they finally brought him up to the majors,
42
years
old.
My recollection is correct.
Mm-hmm. 42 years old, threw a two-hit, 12-inning shutout as a 42-year-old in the majors. Two-hit, 12-inning shutout.
And to add to that legend, Lady A, just quickly, what I hear is that one day the owner of the team were watching him where after the guys worked out, and Satch is throwing the ball over the plate, you know. And so the owner's watching, and Satch says, "Oh, you want to see something? I'm just playing. Here, move the plate and put a quarter where the plate is." And basically, Doc was, to make a long story at least a little shorter, was hitting all ends of the quarters for that pinpoint control that you were speaking of. The left part of the quarter, the right part of the quarter, the middle part of a quarter.
Max,
that's supposedly the legend of how great his control was.
Dusty Baker told me, and I realized, you know, because Satchel was a coach on the Braves team, and the great Dusty Baker, the first African-American manager to win the Manager of the Year award twice, okay? And Dusty told me, I remember his office, he said, there were days that he would pitch batting practice. He said, "Mel, we could do nothing with him. We could do nothing." Mr. Pay, thanks a lot, sir. We're going to let somebody else pitch now, sir. You must be tired. He said, "Hey, Mel, we could do nothing with him in batting practice on some of the days he would pitch batting practice." The great Leroy Satchel Paige. I met him, remember the day explicitly, the night of Ollie Foreman. I'm going to Madison Square Garden and the steps of a righteous man. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network, the show, How I Got It, When I Got It, Negro Leagues. My credential is not there. And in those days, they left you a ticket. And
hold up, Doc. I got to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
You're going around saying how you got it, when you got how, what do you got? You got baseball signed by him? What do you got over there?
Well, Satchel, I have I'm going to tell you what happened. Okay, here's the statue story. So I go around the employees. There's a guy named Gene, late great Gene. He was the employees. That's the Gene. I said my credential is not around. I know John left it for me. Could you call upstairs for me? So Gene said, "Okay, he's getting on the phone." And Harry Robinson comes down, who was the statistician for the Knicks radio wise. Like me, Harry, and Walt Frazier. The last two people to come out of the locker room were Walt Frazier. Always just be me and Harry Robinson.
Speaking of, they're losing by 4 points, but go ahead.
Okay, Lady A on the case. Harry was Clyde's right-hand man, and the great Walt Frazier befriended me. And Harry says, "Hey, ain't that Satchel Paige?" I look to the right. There he is.
Get out of here.
Tall, thin, in a tuxedo. Two young ladies, I guess, with him. And I went over, and he gave me two autographs. I have two autographs by Satchel Paige. Negro League players, I'm wearing a cap now autographed by Max Manning, Charlie Biot, Jim Carter, Armando Vasquez, Bo Wallace, Pee Wee Jenkins.
All of them signed it?
Oh, yeah. I've got three or four hats like that. I've got a couple of the hats. I've got some bats, miniature bats autographed them. I have some pictures. I have a photo of me, Jim Robinson, Armando Vasquez, and Bob Scott. I have about four baseballs autographed by Negro League players. I have a bat autographed by Hugh Mullins, one of the legendary home run hitters. So I have a bat autograph. I have a miniature bat, and I have a full bat autographed by Negro League players, as well as a horde of baseballs. I have about six or seven caps autographed by a horde of them. Ray Nobley was one of the Negro League players too that came up in the major leagues as Art Russell played for the Giants, and you know it was just. I said, you know, you never can kind of put into words what it was like to meet these guys that I have read about. Now, I've got a book here, and I have two of these in the Sports and Death, Trust in God, Artifacts Hall of Fame. Lady A says it's not a Hall of Fame, Doc. It's not a museum. It's an artifacts. And I was able to get two of these books, and it's the biographical encyclopedia of the Negro League Baseball Leagues, forwarded by Monty Irving. I have also some pictures, you know.
Doc, just a quick question. You were talking about, like, the Negro Leagues. Back then, there's a question I always had. Back then, you know, now they use, like, a lot of the, pine tar and stuff on the bats.
Yeah.
And you have players that, through the years, have started wearing batting gloves. Back then, what did some of those players use?
Hey, you rub some dirt on the back.
Okay.
In fact, it wasn't until the early 60s that the batting gloves came in. In fact, if you remember, Rooney, the players only used one glove, a golf glove. They weren't batting gloves.
Yeah,
they weren't two.
They didn't wear two. They only wore,
They only wore one. If you were right-handed batter, you wore it on your left hand. If you're left-handed batter, you wore it on your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the book here, and I had forgot that I also have the legendary Larry Doby in this book, as well as the man who lived to be over 100 years old, Double Duty Radcliffe. Now I'm looking, Buck O'Neill, Double Duty Radcliffe, Joe Black, James Bo Wallace, Carl J. Buck O'Neill says something that I'll never forget. I have a poster here, autographed. I forgot about that, too. And, you know, I'm glad you people remind me. I have an autographed poster from his book right on time. And Buck O'Neill said, you know what? I wasn't born too soon, so I was born right on time. He said, you know what? I played against the best players in the world. I ate in the best restaurants in the world. I saw the greatest performers in the world, all African-Americans. He said, you know, I didn't want to play in those leagues, but, you know, I just wanted them to at least have the courtesy to ask me. You know, it was the Negro Leagues who brought about lights way before. And Buck told a story about how some of the players would ride on the front of the car and some would ride on the back. And he said Satch was such a crazy driver that Satch used to drive so fast that he said, Satch, you know, let me out. I'll wait for the bus. But, you know, Mr. O'Neill said, hey, man, I played against the greatest players, ate in the best restaurants. I mean, imagine being at a game and there's Louis Armstrong playing. You know, imagine being at a game and, you know, Billie Holiday is singing. He said, no. He said, I didn't miss anything. I didn't begrudge him. In fact, Buck O'Neill, I got an autograph picture, a couple of autograph pictures. He was the first African-American coach from the Negro Leagues or ever in the Major League Baseball. And he got has a story about the nickname Nancy, but Buck O'Neill, you know, Satchel came up in '48. It's amazing how it turned out. In 1947, when Jack Roosevelt Robinson came into the major leagues, well, earlier that year, the great Josh Gibson, the only man to hit a fair ball out of Yankee Stadium, both witnessed by two legendary figures of our time, the legendary late Art Rush Jr., who tells a story of coming in with his dad, just as the ball was being hit, the ball went out of the park, and he turned to his father and said, "Where's the ball? Where'd it go? Where'd it go?" And the great Hal Jackson told the story of being there. He was there too when Josh hit the only fair ball out of Yankee Stadium. And when I got into early meetings with the Negro League players, Josh Gibson Jr. was there, and Josh Gibson Jr. told the story of everywhere he went. Every ballpark, a pitcher would say, hey, you Josh's boy? Come here, let me show you something. Let me walk out here. We'll take him to the deepest parts. Now, your dad hit one off me that went over here. He went and hit. Every pitcher had a spot where Josh Gibson hit a home run off of him. Gibson hit 75 one year, considered the greatest catcher of all time, and just a close friend, too, of Hal Jackson. And as we talk about the Negro Leagues, as we do our Black History Month, it was, like I said, as I go back to John McGraw, it was McGraw who wanted the black players. And when he died, so he had a list of the black players that he would have taken had he been allowed to take them. McGraw, for all intents and purposes, is the greatest manager of all time. He didn't win as many games as Connie Mack, but he lost less games. Of the top five managers in baseball, he lost the less games and has the highest winning percentage. He won the 60% of his games. The Negro League players, you know, what happened? Buck O'Neill told a great story. He said, you know, what happens is that, you know, a guy that makes $5 million starts living where the guy that makes $5 million live. And the integration brought about the deterioration of the Negro Leagues. Jackie was the guy, as Mr. Buck Leonard said, he wasn't his best player in the Negro Leagues, but he was the best suited. 20-something years old, college grad, had interacted with whites out in California. He was a guy they felt was best suited. Now, Monty Irving, okay, was the guy that they were looking at. And Harvey Farmer, as you got, as you, that panel, you remember he was with us on one of our shows, we're going to have him back too, his baseball start. He said, now, Monty Irvin was the guy that they were originally looking at. And Harvey told us right here, Monty said, I couldn't have done it. Monty said, I would have killed somebody. Now, Monty, as you know, what a great guy he is. His name is M-O-N-T-Y, but he put the E on it. So when he signed baseballs, there'd be room for teammates. He wouldn't run into anybody. Yeah, his name wouldn't run into anybody else's. And as a youth, Monty had a very serious ailment, and there was serious thought of amputation of his arm.
Really?
Yeah, serious amputation of his arm. And his mother.
What did he have? What kind of? What did he have?
I was reading Willie Mays, like exactly
like
what
polio
it was.
Polio or something like that, or?
Well, they couldn't figure what it was, but the consensus was if it didn't get better, amputation was going to have to be the solution. And it did get better. Then when they first approached his mother, she said, "No, you know, we can't do that. That's my baby, and he's an athlete. It'll kill him." And the good Lord, as he's the doctor, never lost a patient. Monty came through, became the first African American to lead the National League in RBIs, and in 1951, along with Hank Thompson and Willie Howard Mays, his rookie year, became the first all-black outfield in baseball history. And his first game in World Series, Monty Irvin, was on the verge of five hits and had stole home. And,
you know, Doc, you're saying that about him, that, and I just can't think of anybody else, at least in my life, from watching baseball, that has actually played without, you know, I know like Jim Abbott, you know, he had that disability.
Right,
you know,
yeah,
he had
a disability.
But
right.
I can't think of anybody else outside of that was able to actually play like that. Have you?
Well, Monty didn't lose his arm. But
no,
there,
I'm saying,
was,
but I'm saying in general, now that I know
you
brought that up.
Abbott, and only that, I mean, Abbott threw a no-hitter.
Yeah, I know.
Abbott threw a no-hitter.
But as successful as him, I can't think of anybody in baseball, right, that really.
Yeah. Well, see, in,
yeah,
in
really,
Monty,
no, not
well,
not that
know, in Monty's case, yeah. C Wings, you with us? Okay, we got a third call. Who's joining us?
No doubt, another huge fan of ours.
Who? Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Who's this?
C Wings.
Okay. Yeah, that's the Wings. That's the Wings. Yeah, we hear you, Wings.
I'm trying to get my charge before the phone dies.
Okay. Well, listen. You can hang up and call back. We're going to be here a good, we got 90 minutes, so, you know, he's got the hoops with him, so we can get the rundown.
I have to ask you, who was it, Doc, before you go further? Who was it, Doc, that actually started, I believe, a bona fide a midget one day? Was it Charles Finley? I think the guy was like 3'5" or something.
That wasn't Finley. That was Bill Veeck.
Veeck, good job. Right,
Bill
Veeck.
Yeah, Bill Veeck. Who? Now, Bill Veeck. Now, you know, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show. You know, it's you know, you people, you know, you keep talking about the story. You people are simply amazing, and it just validates, you know, why you're here, what a blessing you are to me, and how the good Lord has. Has blessed me with your now. Now you brought that up. Now it's, you know, Bill Veeck. There was two things Vic had. Vic was going to buy the Baltimore Orioles. And with the Baltimore Orioles, nothing stays the same. Hal Jackson was going to be the first black to ever do play-by-play baseball. As it turned out, it was Bill White. The job also.
Oh yeah, Bill White for the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah. Now the job
that was in the 70s, Doc.
Yeah, yeah, but this is going to be back in the 40s and the 50s. And it's the 50s. He would have been, Hal Jackson would have been before Bill White, but the deal fell through. The owners didn't want to give, for some reason, Veeck didn't get the orders. Now, Veeck, in turn, was going to buy in 44, was it the Indians? I think it was the Indians. And the deal was done. And what Vic was going to do in 1944, Vic said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy this team, and it's going to be all black team. I'm going to bring Sachin,
I'm going to bring Josh, Max Manning, Willie Wells, Buck Leonard. Hey, this is going to be the all-black team. And, hey, I'm going to straighten this thing out. What happened? What happened was somebody got word to the commissioner. And when Vec left that Friday, only having to come back on Monday to dot the I's and cross the T's, somebody else got the team. And he was like, what? Oh, no, hey, we sold the team. But what Vec was going to do, Vec was going to bring, integrate baseball. He was going to do what Rube Foster had of sort of
everything must
preordained in his mind. Andrew Rube Foster was an outstanding pitcher himself. Foster's mindset was, they're not going to take one guy, but I'll have a team ready. And the best team out of Negro Leagues, that's the team when they're ready to take one. You know, because this way they won't have to commingle, they won't have to associate. You know, it won't be one guy. Because you know what's happening in those days when the Negro League teams would play in a Major League ballpark, they were soaping the showers, but they couldn't stay in the, like if they were Yankee Stadium, Yankee clubhouse. But it was a known fact that fans loved the way they played, and they regularly outdrew, you know, the home team.
Well, that's the way of life. Sports Net
for the Blake Network, Rainbow Social, Sports Net for the show. How I got it, when I got it, and we're talking about the Negro Leagues. And we also want to take a quick moment here. That was a tremendous point you bring up about Vec, because Vec was going to buy, it might have been, I thought it was the Cleveland Indians, and he was going to buy, the team was for sale. He was going to buy the team. And it's going to be an all-black base with Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, Buck Leonard, Willie Wells, Buck O'Neill, Max, all the great Negro League, they were going to be in that team. Somebody dimed on them, and the deal fell through, as did the Baltimore Oriole deal fall through, which had he gotten the team. It might have been the same setup, but had that been the case, Hal Jackson would have been the first play-by-play black sportscaster, as he was the first black everything anyway, and you would have had an all-black team. But
I know it was kind of known that Vec was supposed to be a bit of an innovator. Was it him, Doc, where it came up with the idea of like an orange baseball or something?
No.
One of the guys wanted to change the color of the ball.
Vec came up with that closer scoreboard and all that stuff. Now, your guy, the name you mentioned before, Finley, came up with the orange baseball concept.
All right. Okay.
And I'm telling y'all, if the Knicks don't play some ball, they're about to lose this game.
Well, I mean, they won a nice amount of them. Doc Stanley Sports Network, Rainbow Soul Chess Sports Network Show. You know, John McEnroe is also here, and I wanted to say happy birthday to John, whose birthday was yesterday, as we continue the birthday. And it's apropos that McEnroe's birthday is in Black History Month. You know, McEnroe is the one guy that's continued to carry the torch lit by Arthur Ashe. Arthur, I remember the last time I saw Arthur Ashe. Larry Hardesty and Arthur Ashe are very close. And it was a tennis affair out in Jersey. What an affair. Your man Earl Monroe was there, sharp change. Oh,
my God.
It inundated. And I did an interview with Arthur. Had a gentleman working cable, and we did an interview. And I have the magazine. I happened to go through Boy's Life about a year later, and there was that picture of me interviewing Arthur Ashe. And it was a great picture. It's a color shot. Because I remember talking to Arthur when he won Wimbledon. I just gotten into the business. And I asked him how he felt, you know, about being the Jackie Robinson of tennis. And Arthur had said he had long gotten over that. You know, long gotten over that. He's a Virginia guy like I am, born in Virginia. And I remember he had some concerns once I had read about, you know, Arthur, a good name, class, character. You know, it was upsetting to so many of us that Arthur was infused with the AIDS virus through a blood transfusion that he had up at Presbyterian Hospital. And I remember, as if it was yesterday, talking with Arthur at that affair, and me and Larry walking with Arthur as he getting ready to leave. And I never forget, I tell Larry that, Larry Hardesty, the voice that brings us on here on Blake Radio Network, the greatest African sportscaster in the history of this city and this world. You're number one here. And, you know, as I say, this is the voice that you hear. Greatest African sportscaster.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc gives you
so vividly
is as I was walking behind Arthur, and he didn't leave, and he said, talk to you later, Larry. That's the last, well, I mean, we didn't know it would be the last time we see Arthur. Talk to you later, Larry. And great player, great person, great human being. The first, I remember meeting Arthur at an affair. I have a picture, autographed picture of me and Arthur. I have Arthur, one of my Arthur Ashe pieces in here is a Leroy Neiman reprint that I got him and Leroy to autograph.
You're talking about that. It's interesting you bring that point up about Arthur Ashe because not only did they name, you know, when you go to the U.S. Open, you know, they have Arthur Ashe Stadium, but also you go right across and you go to the New City Field and they have the Jackie Robinson Rotunda. So it says something about Queens in general, you know, and African American history, you know, how they've.
A great point.
Stadium and also the rotundas, all you know, and then they have the Jackie Robinson Day all the time, you know, with his wife who does so much for the community and what she's done for the Mets, you know, and trying to inject.
I'm just so upset that I saw her across the street. I don't know how she was like Jackie with that speech. She got into Bloomingdale's and she was gone. I hope I can catch up with her again. I wanted to have her on the show, especially Black History Month. Jackie's birthday is the day just before Black History Month starts. You're right. Arthur,
they also have. Hey, listen, the Yankees don't have it, but they have Jackie Robinson Day at the Mets. You know, at the stadium.
It's the National League recognizes. You know what? You make a good point. I don't think the American League does because what they did. Now I think everybody wears 42. And I was there.
Right.
In 1997, when President Clinton, where they saluted the 50th year of Jackie Robinson, and it was then confirmed that whoever had number 42 as a player, they would be the last player on each incumbent team to wear that number, because after that, number 42
retired.
Will be retired.
Right.
Ironically, Mario Rivera, who would have his number retired anyway, wears number 42 for the Yankees. And I once asked Willie Mays, did he ever realize that his number 24 was Jackie Robinson backwards? And Willie said, nah. He said, you know, but hey, Jackie, you know, Jackie was just so revered. Willie was the youngest player to come out of the Negro Leagues, and he started, he continued the trend. Jackie was the rookie of the year in 1947. I believe Campanella won it in 49. Willie won it in 51. Newcomb won it. Sam Jethro, Junior Gilliam won it. Orlando Zepeda won it. Willie McCovey won it. And one of the things that I remember my druggist in the neighborhood, he used to love to go to the drugstore, so he would sit there and talk sports, was that the National League realized that the African-American player could be a star, superstar, and also a drawing factor in their league way before the American League did. And if you look back, I mean, the last black player attained by making it every team having a player was Eli Pumpsy Green. Remember Art Russ, Eli Pumpsy Green, the Boston Red Sox. A lot was said that probably had Ted Williams not spent that inordinate amount of time in the military, it would happen a lot sooner. Pumpsy said how great Ted was to him. Yankees didn't get a black player in 1955, Elson Howard. And, in fact, I think Howard made the last out in 55 to win the Seal the World Series for the Dodgers. But I think Howard also may have been the first World Series MVP winner, as he was without question. He's the first ever African-American to win the MVP award in the American League, 1963. And the number 32 was a big number that year, as Jim Brown won the MVP in the NFL with number 32. And in the National League, the MVP was none other than Sandy Koufax, who also or number 32. The numbers are big. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake with another Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports Depth is the show. It is How and When I Got It and the Negro League Salute. And back on
and
John
Doc, one more thing. Now that you're doing a plug, just a quick plug to the guys out that did our baseball hats, Sports and Depth baseball hats now.
Good, good.
You know, out to our guys out there.
Hold on, lady. Let me do this, and I want you to tell us all about that and give them a plug. Just want to get into the macro thing. You know, it was John who not only carried the torch, but, you know, John has started a tennis academy out there on Randall's Island. And he's, you know, the guy's been to the interview. He said something. He said, you know, in every other sport, kids come up on a peewee baseball field, a peewee football field, okay, a peewee soccer field. Only in tennis do the kids play on a regulation court. And he said, you know, that, the expense, you know, he said, you know, they need to make a court apropos to the age of the youth. And a lot of people don't know this. John was a hell of a soccer player. And great family. I love his mom's and dad. I remember his mother when they had the new stadium. I'm going up to my press seat and I see her. Hi, Mrs. McEnroe. She said, hi. She said, hi. She said, where are you going? She said, I'm looking for my seat. I said, Mrs. McEnroe, you can't be sitting up here. You got to be down there. She laughed. Okay, McEnroe, John Sr., his father, was a lawyer in the military, if I'm correct. And you know, John McEnroe, you know this about John McEnroe. You know, John McEnroe always wore his USA jacket when he played tennis. He always played Davis Cup. He was number one in the world, always had time for his country in Davis Cup. And you know, McEnroe also is the guy who tells you his number one hero in life, as much as he loves Rod Laver, is none other than Nelson Mandela. And he was elated when he got a chance to meet Mandela. And McEnroe took a stand. McEnroe told this story in his book, Are You Serious? McEnroe was offered in an inordinate amount of money. Okay,
millions, Doc.
To go to South Africa and play Bjorn Borg. The first thing John Patrick McEnroe Jr., the Sugar Ray Robinson of tennis, did, he called Arthur Ashe. This is a young man at 23, 24, still a boy. Arthur, if I go to South Africa and play Bjorn Borg, will it make a difference? Arthur said, no, it won't. John McEnroe said, I looked in the mirror and took a stand and said, no. I am so proud. One day I was at an affair and I asked John to sign a picture for me. And when I went home, I looked at the picture and it said, your friend, John McEnroe. I'm proud to be a friend of his and a guy. He called me one time. They had an affair. Howard Bingham had an exhibition of Ollie's pictures at John's gallery. And I got a call at the legendary Mickey Mantle's at the time when Larry Hart was doing the show. I got a phone call. Hello, Doc Stanley? Yeah, just Mr. McEnroe's guy. Could you hold on a second? Mr. McEnroe wants to speak to you. Here comes, for my money, okay, the greatest all-around tennis player ever. At his best, I don't see nobody being McEnroe. Not Federer, not Nadal, not Tanner, not Borg.
You got to realize, too, Doc, they got different rackets now, too. I mean, back in the day,
and the point you bring up is this, though. McEnroe was also
one of the greatest players.
And not only that, see, it reminds me of that Barry Bonds thing. The big Barry Bonds was as good as the little Barry Bonds. And McEnroe was a guy in that transition period.
Yeah.
And he was great. McEnroe still has the 1 year record. I think 84-3, 84-4.
What, with the majors?
No. As far as wins, he won 80 something match. Only, and in fact, the year that he did it, I was upset. He lost to Lindell in the French Open. He was winning.
Oh, yeah,
Lindell beat him.
I remember that.
And he came back and won.
Game set
won
match.
Yeah, and came and went back, and then he beat, he won the U.S. Open. In fact, on my son's birthday, I got to thank you, September 9th was a big day. That was the, September 9th was the date that Arthur Ashe won the U.S. Open, and September 9th was the date that John McEnroe won his first U.S. Open. But, I mean, I just can't say enough about him. They're great, great boxing. You know, John can be funny. I remember it was a Riddick Bowe and Michael Doak's heavyweight championship fight. And Mike, John is, because I first saw John sitting courtside, ringside at Leonard Hearns. And that's how I saw him until I started talking boxing. And so he has his son with him, one of his sons with him. And I said, Mac, I said, you know, you just was the other boy. He said, Doc, only had two tickets. I only had two tickets. And at one time, you know, he called me for the Howard Bingham affair, and he said, hey, Doc, you know, I want to apologize, you know, for calling you so late, but could you make it here tomorrow? Howard has an exhibition. And Bingham, as you know, is Muhammad Ali's personal photographer and his best friend. And there's a photo there of Ali and Ray Robinson and Joe Louis. And Ali says, you know, this is one of my favorite photos. He said, you know, they were my heroes. They were my idols. And I've had a chance. Those three guys, I've got an Ali autograph, of course, and I was able to get a Joe Louis autograph. And I remember McEnroe, again, at the sportscaster's dinner, and Major Giuliani was there, and he spoke, you know, and he left. And John got up afterwards, and John was talking. He said, you know, I don't know what he's talking about. He said, but all the tennis players voted for Dinkins. And I'd asked him one time.
Yeah, you know why that is, though, right?
He's a tennis player?
Why? No.
Why?
Because of what he did for the U.S. Open and rerouting the flights to go mm-hmm. not to go over the stadium. Mm-hmm. And that's why to this day there's only one way pretty much here in and out. And when you see them line up in a string of pearls, they usually come in and out and in the same direction based on,
mm-hmm.
on the winds and stuff like that. But pretty much he redirected flights so that they wouldn't go over the U.S. Open
mm-hmm.
because that was a big complaint for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mac, I'd asked him one time, Mac, if you get a chance, could I possibly have, one of your racks or something like that, and get a phone call. Hello, Doc Stanley. Yeah, this is John McEnroe's office. About 15 minutes. A gentleman he'll be bringing a racket over to you. John had one of his rackets hand delivered. I got to get an autograph, but it's one of the things, in the artifacts that I just don't. That's one of the things that will always go with me. There's certain things I have that will never be sold, as I never thought about selling them anyway till now. But to leave it just special, he's a great player. I remember he beat Yvonne Lindell one time in the Volvo Masters, and he broke Lindell, I think, once or twice or three times. And Yvonne Lindell said, I wouldn't believe that I get broken just twice and lose in straight sets. John Patrick McEnroe Jr., the Sugar Ray Robinson of tennis, that makes him the best of all time. We're talking about the Negro Leagues. We're talking about Black History Month. We're talking
right.
about Hall of Fame, artifacts. So any questions? DocStanleySports.com.
I'm sorry.
Hit the site. And you look at it, and you'll see what I have. You see what you like. Give us a call. Black Sports.
DocStanleySports.com.
DocStanleySports.com. That's it. Lady A and Mel Cosella here. We're talking everything, anything. The Negro League.
And speaking
like I said,
of everything and anything, Doc, mm-hmm. I have something that I have to bounce off you. After the fights one night, and obviously you being H reporter, you were there at the Garden. I think it may have been, I'm not sure, it may have been the Ray Mercer, Lennox Lewis heavyweight rumble, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I remember sitting next to Ali's official biographer, I think it was John Hauser?
Tom Hauser.
Tom Hauser?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Tom Hauser.
Tom.
I'm sorry, Doc?
Tom Hauser,
right.
Mm-hmm. And Lydia, he tells the story, being Ali's official biographer, that Ali would have a habit of driving around whatever particular city that he was in and just tell his driver, stop right here. They say he wouldn't say a word. He'd get out of the car. They'd see him hand some poor down on his luck guy, something. Get back in the car and say, all right, proceed. I said, yeah. He said what had happened was Ali would get out of the car, put $100 and put some poor guy's who's down on his left pocket, would hand it to him himself, not send some flunky, not send the driver, get out of the car himself, put throwing some poor unfortunate down on his luck guy's hand, get back in the car, not mention it, and say, proceed. And, Doc and Lady, I was thinking, here this guy, maybe at the time, the most recognizable athlete in the world.
No question.
He should do that for Allen Iverson now that just filed for bankruptcy.
Lady A, we did not need that to be interjected, okay?
Doc, I'm just saying how amazing it is. You have the most known man at the time probably in the world. Not sending some flunky.
Well, he still is. It's no question that he is. And in McEnroe, I told him one time, there's a lot of Ali and McEnroe. McEnroe stood up. McEnroe, I'm talking about John and his late buddy, Gary Leitis, having tennis, little tennis lessons and classes up in Harlem. you know, up in certain parts of Jamaica, Queens. I remember Girolitis coming up in Harlem, you know, and these guys would do that. And McEnroe, they took a stand on certain issues. You know, always said what was on his mind, okay, and here's the guy.
Oh, he's big for that, Doc. He's always been very boisterous.
And Girolitis had said something that was very true about the officiating. He said, you know what, I'm in the pros now, and I see people who officiating when I was in the juniors. I mean, come on. I mean, it has to improve.
But that's why they have the John McEnroe cam now, Doc.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there you go. I mean, this guy is, you know, and guys, they like Ali. You know, like Ali, a lot of people, you know, didn't like Mike because he was boisterous, didn't like Mike because he took Mike, John, because he took a stand. Then after a while, they came over. Because, I mean, and the thing about McEnroe, like I said, here's a guy who was number one in the world, always found time for Davis Cup, always, didn't wear his neck, had his USA jacket on. I remember they said about McEnroe the one time, they said the number one doubles team in the world, okay, is John McEnroe and anybody. I said, dang, that could be Doc Stanley. Me, you know, John McEnroe, I mean, just a great, great player. And like I said, he's the guy that's carried the mantle and the torch of this thing of Arthur. I mean, I'm not saying anything against, you know, the other acting, but, you know, John is a New York kind of guy. If you know his family, I remember his dad one time. I'm at the basketball game because they all had a little section right up front there, and I'm walking past Mr. Max. Hey, Doc, is there any way you can get me the score of the football game? Talking about the soccer game. I love the family, love the just great bunch of people. And like I said, for my money, when he's on his game, you know, it wasn't a matter if he was going to win, it's how he was going to win. And more importantly, like Ali, I remember Ali, they told the story of Ali being in a foreign country. And said, hey, champ, you're here. I tell you what, we got $4 million to fight so-and-so. And I'm like, hey, no, I can't. I can't do this in my government. You know, people forget what patriots these guys are and also how much they do for their fellow man. You tell that story of Ali. I mean, Aram told the story. There was some guy, they were staying at the hotel, and the guy was running up bills, and they brought the guy in, and he said he was with Ali, and Ali came in, they brought the guy in to see Ali, and Bob said, man, you knew full well Ali didn't know the guy. Ali looked at him and said, oh, yeah, put on my tab, he's with me. Bob said, you knew he didn't know the guy. You know?
Ali wasn't his.
They tell the story of Ali being someplace, and hey, champ, this lady outside says she needs 200 to bury her mother. Give it to her. I said, champ, you don't know. I said, what's it to know? She's got to bury her mother. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, your show. It is How I Got It, When I Got It, and we're talking Black History Month, and we're also saying happy birthday to John Patrick McEnroe. As we also said earlier, Bill Russell, 22 rebounds a game he averaged.
That's crazy.
22. Eddie Murray, birthday next month, next week, 24th. Eddie Murray is the only switch hitter in the history of baseball with over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and 3,000 base hits. And I correct him, McCovey, I think he's only second to Lou Gehrig in Grand Slams hit in a major league career.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a little break, come back, and talk some more. As you know, fight-wise, next week, press conference for Dawson and Bernard Hopkins, and then the following week, at the legendary Apollo Theater, there will be the press conference for Miguel Cotto and Floyd Money Mayweather, Doc Stanley, Sports and Death, on the Blake Radio. Let's get you Blake Radio Network. We're Blake. Blake Radio Network. How I Got It, When I Got It. Continuing Black History Month, the Negro Leagues as the preseason spring training starts to kick out. And we'll talk about the leagues. Like I said, it was Andrew Foster who brought it about, and Hank Aaron came from the Negro Leagues, played shortstop for the Indianapolis Clowns, and was batting cross-handed for the longest time. And they tell the story of Hank supposedly was considering becoming a switch hitter, but the bat flew out of his hand and hit a teammate, and he discarded the whole idea of becoming a switch hitter. Doc Stanley, Sports Up with the Blake, the Rainbow Soul Channel for the show. Doc, slow down. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Deficit Show. We'll take a quick break and come riding back along with Lady A and Mel Cosell. Speaking of sports, this is Hot with Cosell. Don't anybody move. We'll be right back.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
You talk Black History Month, and the cap that I'm wearing is Newark Eagles cap. Don Newcomb played on that team. Don Newcomb was the first man to win the Cy Young and MVP ever. As in 1956, they implemented the Cy Young Award, and Newcomb won the Cy Young Award and the MVP Award. And sometimes he would even bat like eighth or seventh in the lineup. He was such that good of a hitter. I was thinking about you the other day, Rooney, because as you know, DocSandySports.com is my site. Take a look at it. And Lady A said something today. She said, Doc, you know, because, you know, we talked about what Buck O'Neill said, and we talked about the entertainment level. And I was telling Lady A earlier that sports and entertainment, they commingle, they intertwine, they're so part
they really
of each
do.
Other. And I remember I got a stand-up comedy gig. One of my photographers, Samir Dean, was at a press conference, and he asked the guy where he's from. The guy said, so-and-so. He said, well, no, you're boxing? I'm not in boxing. He said, I'm just here with so-and-so. I'm like, I need a stand-up comedy open for the Whispers. And he said, hey, my
Whispers, oh, my God, that's
and I got a chance to open for them. And also, in saying that, I got they autographed the album for me. I remember Whitney Houston opened for her mother. She was the second act opened for at the legendary late Sweetwater's Club. Brooke Benton was the first, and I remember addressing Whitney, seeing her in the audience, and saw her later.
I still can't believe the Whispers, Doc. You know that my jam, my favorite jam that
what?
They sang.
What?
More of the Night. Oh, that song
really?
Was
more,
it.
More of the Night.
You never heard that one?
It must be on the album. We'll get it. You know what? I first got into them. Want to Make It With You.
Uh-huh.
And then my man Anthony's a big, and then they did. I used to play it so much. My kids, Melvin Turquoise, that's when they had the big, the giant 45s. It's a love thing.
Oh
yeah.
No, that's old
that was
school.
That a great jam, man. A tremendous
man,
jam.
I remember.
My God, that's old school.
I would pick Melvin Turquoise.
Yeah, big old school. Yeah, no doubt.
And they would come over to the house.
When that song came out, you were wearing your pro kids back in the day.
Hey! With the fist pick and the afro, and I remember them saying Poppy, and then they was like, it's a love thing. That
you
I
know
love
what I'm
that.
Saying?
Then
Doc was rocking
music.
The Playboy shoes though. I don't know who he's trying to kid.
But I remember meeting them.
Lady A, back in the day, the ponies with Doc. Listen,
don't even say that because you know he probably has that in his archives, like Larry Holmes autographed ponies.
He probably does.
No, you know what? The first pair of boxing shoes I ever got, the Juan Laporte is the first Puerto Rican ever to win the featherweight championship of the world. Yeah, your classmate.
You know, Doc, I used to drive our teachers crazy back in Richmond Hill.
It was good that you went to school.
We were in the same class. He was going to be.
I remember
drive them crazy.
You were there. I think you were at that fight when he fought. You know, Chavez almost lost.
He fought Juan Laporte
in the Garden. I remember that fight, man, with a monster fight. And I remember because I was in Juan's locker room and Chavez was just starting to come up and they asked Chavez close fight. They asked Chavez if the decision had went the other way. You know, what's your reaction? And they said, Chavez said, as if he was sipping a glass of water, he said, I would not have argued. I was there the night that, as we talked about the Tony Danza thing, the night that Tony Danza came down to the Garden, he was a fighter. You know, he fought, and that whole crew
he
came
fought in the Golden Gloves, didn't he, Doc?
He might have.
Yeah, I think he fought in the Golden Gloves,
yeah,
I think I heard.
Because when they needed somebody for taxi, he was over at the gym. And the night
yeah.
that he fought, Laporte was on the card, and all of his crew, Judd Hirsch, Danny DeVito, Penny Mark, it was all that.
Mary Lou Henner.
In fact.
Mary Lou Henner. Ah! Five.
Mary Lou.
Are you ready? I've got that poster in my archives from the night he fought, autographed by Tony Danza. I've got that. And the other day, Rooney, I thought about you, because I'm, as you know, Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Rainbow Show, Channel Sports and Death. The show we're talking Black History Month. We're talking about the Sports and Death Trust in God Artifacts Hall of Fame. And as you know, I'm on my way to Fort the Laser. Hit the site, see something you like, get to us. And I was moving stuff around, and I said, oh, I got this ball up here. Who's on this ball? So I grabbed this ball in a case, and I see, oh, Larry Doby, the first African-American to play in the World Series, the first African-American to lead the league in home runs and RBIs, the first African-American to win a World Series. And then I see, oh, man, that's Bob Feller on the top. Bob Feller had 11 one-hitters. 11 one-hitters, and the only man to date to ever throw an opening day no-hit. Rapid Robert, who Joseph Paul DiMaggio said was the toughest pitcher he had to face. Then I see this Brooks Robinson, considered the greatest defensive third baseman of all time, George Thomas Seaver. I'm looking around. There's Bill White. There's Johnny Bench, who many consider the greatest catcher of all time. There's Lou Brock. You know, Lou Brock, when he was with Chicago, baseball wasn't going so well for him. Lou said, you know, I'm going to give another Lou try, and I think I may have to give this thing up. Trade him to the Cardinals, and they say the rest is history. One of the only 28 guys to get 3,000 hits.
You got anything, Doc? I'm sorry. You got anything in there with Charlie Hustle?
Yeah, I have Pete on the bat. I have Pete on the bat. I've got Pete on a ball somewhere around here too, but I've got Pete on a miniature bat. I've got Pete on the ball too. Pete on the ball, and this ball here now after Feller, Warren Spahn, 363, the most wins. God is so great. I remember them. The most wins by left-handed pitcher.
Let me say this. I hate to interrupt, but I would be remiss if I don't get this in before our broadcast goes off. Because
okay.
You mentioned Johnny Bench. Mm-hmm. I, again, want to give my condolences to, obviously, a great icon and singing legend, Whitney Houston, and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to give my condolences again to Gary Carter and
the
his
kid.
Family.
The kid.
Because
you know,
the
I,
kid,
you,
one
you,
of
you,
the great
you just spoke to me. Go ahead, Ronnie.
No, I was just going to say, because kid... obviously, as you both know, just passed away recently.
Yesterday.
And so I'd be remiss if I didn't give my
condolences on behalf of
my
very
deepest condolences.
Nation, Rooney.
On behalf of the kid Carter and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Rooney, did he? Just a question to you guys. Did he get divorced from Nancy Lopez, the PGA golfer, or did they end up staying together till the end, or no?
You have to check that one, Doc. I'm not sure.
I don't know. He was married to Lopez for a while?
Yeah, for a while, yeah, yeah. They were married. Remember, I think they got married a little after they won the series. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
He,
the golfer.
You know, the Carter, I thought the year that Mets won it all, I thought he should have been MVP. I don't understand how Mike Schmidt got that. You know, Mike Schmidt was on a last-place team.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets the Hoopsa said that Carter had told him that he used to carry an extra glove. He had to wear an extra glove because Doc threw so hard. I remember him saying that the year that Doc was too proud, that the team used to just laugh at other teams trying to hit Doc. He made the Hall of Fame, and I remember because I was there because he went into the Hall of Fame with my good buddy, the great, and my dear friend Eddie Murray. So I was up there, and you know, we had a good time with both of them.
You know what's ironic about when they won that series, Doc, in 86?
Mm-hmm.
You know what's ironic about that? They were being pegged as a bunch of misfits, and yet look what they did. They were able to accomplish.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Let me get to this.
Everybody was saying that about him, and it's like, yeah, but you know what?
I think a lot of people felt Carter was so much like the Busher. He was the final piece to the puzzle.
I mean,
here's a guy that could catch. You know, one time Carter was the highest paid player in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he also had the kind of charisma and personality that was perfect for New York City.
It's funny, you know, my dad took me to a game when I think he was playing, and as a matter of fact, it was Doc on the mound, Strawberry was also playing, and Carter were playing the same game. And I remember when Strawberry hit the ball, and way back when Shea Stadium was Shea Stadium, I don't know if you guys remember, they used to have those signs right by where the apple comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now
mm-hmm.
they have the apple in the back by where the bullpen is now. with the new stadium. But in the old stadium, to the right, like toward the center, toward the right, they had, you know, this big sign at the top. It said, if you hit this sign, we'll paint your house for free. So Strawberry ends up hitting the sign. My father goes bananas. He was going crazy. He's like, I want to get my house painted. You know, blah, blah, blah. Your mother's getting on my case. We need new aluminum siding. I'm like, Dad, I don't think everybody in the stadium needs to hear that. But it was amazing because the first time I got to see all three of them, you know, actually
really?
Play yet in one game.
I mean, you know, you talk about three guys, and let's go. I have, you know, when Carter went to the Hall of Fame, got a chance to meet him, and in the Sports In Depth artifacts, I have a poster autographed by Gary. I have a couple of autographed bats by Strawberry. And what I have, and Doc Gooden is the youngest man ever to win the Triple Crown of pitching. I have two pair of his spikes, a cap, and a couple of balls, and a pair of batting gloves. So, you know, he won the Silver Slug Award as the best hitting pitcher in baseball. So those things are in there. Carter was, I just remember, he came out to Shea after the Hall of Fame thing, and he was getting the car, getting ready to leave, and a buddy of mine had ran to get an autograph, and he was saying no, and he looked up, he said, Hall of Fame, oh, you know, he was, I thought he should have won MVP the year that the Mets won it all. Mike Fitt got it, but he was a class act, a great guy. The kid, again, blessed by the master to meet him and also to have some of his stuff here in the Stux. In fact, I looked at the post the other day, and he was, well, you know, he's going to be missed, and he was an integral part, and he fit in so well with that Met team, the personality.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to play fit in so well. Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Up on the show. It is How When I Got It and Negro Leagues as we salute Black History Month and talk about a host of other things. And the name.
Hand wraps.
You know, it's funny to talk about hand wraps because it was just something that Jonathan
King. What made you start actually? Just interject for a second. What made you actually start, like, you know, like collecting them?
I you know, it was, you know, I don't know. The first hand wrap that I can remember that I got was Mike Tyson's. Mike fought, I remember I took my son, Little Mel. He has a nickname by his godmother. How Little Mel at? Turquoise Irving. And we were in the dressing room with Mike. And, you know, the only thing to autograph was the hand wrap. So he autographed the hand wrap. And as I would go along, I said, that would be a little interesting to have. So me and Roy, we did a nice in-depth piece with Roy up at the when he was.
And, you know, just to clarify for the audience, you know, so that they know, we're not talking about hand wraps that you buy at, like, you know, Sports Authority that you use to in the gym to spar with. We're talking about actual gauze hand wraps that are used by the fighters at the fights. So just to clarify, because, you know, Doc, these people need to know, too, the clarity is important. We're talking about, actual gauze wraps that these guys use at the fights. And, you know, I was so impressed by that, Mel. You don't even understand, Mel. When I went to his house, I was like,
Rooney, she's walking down, and I've got this row of autographed bats. I've got the Ollie pictures on the wall.
And then I saw the Roy Jones.
I've got a picture on the wall autographed by
my baby,
Ollie, John Havlicek, Ken Stabler. You know, there's
Kobe sneakers.
You don't have the snake, Doc. You got Stabler over there, not the snake.
The snake, baby. She says to me, you got Roy Jones hand wraps?
You know? My baby's hand wraps.
Roy, you know, Roy said, you know, Roy met him through Marion Borkin. I always give him a call on his birthday. His birthday is the day before Ali's and the day after Bernard Hopkins and Dr. King's. And he gave me a couple of pair of trunks. It was something I just started. Camacho, now, those other kind of hand wraps you're talking about where the guy's actually wrapping around the pants, Hector gave me a pair of his when I was working with Don King with Tony Tucker. I got some Tony Tucker's.
Tony
T. Tucker. Tony T. Tucker. What an outstanding fight. People don't know how good a great 20 was until he got sick and took a little fall, and it was that little sad story. But boxing-wise, I've got one of the most prosperous. I just think it's one of, I think I told the story, working with Don came to New York, and I found out that I was the first guy ever to give Don on air interview. And Don, also knowing I was a police officer, because he used to come to the press conference, and he teed one day, why don't you lock up that guy? So he called Larry Hardesty. He said, look, you know, I'm thinking about having Doctor, do some work for me. And he said, hey, he couldn't pick a better guy. So he wanted Tony to be tight and ready for the fight with Lennox Lewis. And when we got there, my man Eric Brown, we all got these one-of-a-kind, I'm being redundant, please, one-of-a-kind leather jackets. And I had... I asked Tony to autograph the jacket. It's funny. He said, I messed the jacket up. Point, I'm going to go autograph the jacket. He eventually did. And I had some gloves on the back of the jacket. So I had a host of people sign inside the gloves. And then there's some area outside. And finally, Jose Torres, I gave him the jacket. Thinking he's going to sign inside the glove. Jose took it, signed on the sleeve. That began, that area made the jacket just anywhere and everywhere. And since 1993 to now, there's just not about, there's not a champion of merit. I mean, big name that's not on it. I took a special section for referees. Leroy Neiman did a picture on the front for me, and I hope it didn't fail up. And Bill Gallo did a little drawing on the back for me, so they're on the jacket. And
that's priceless right there, Doc, especially since he passed away.
Yeah, yeah. Gallo. I was one night I was down at the perform, and Jersey Joe Walcott was there, and I got Jersey Joe autograph, and then years later, Bill did a drawing in the Daily News, so I got Bill to autograph it, and I've got that hanging up of my Gallows. I have that, my autograph, had an autograph book. Gallo is on the back. I'm really saddened by Gallo. My grandfather told my uncle something one time. He said, son, if you got something to do, go ahead and do it because you ain't got a lot of time. Gallo was, I remember one time I was somewhere and he came over and he's telling his wife and people, and he said, hey, Mel, Mel's a cop, Mel's a writer, and Mel's a comedian. And his wife looked at him and said, wow, ain't you sure proud? And you know, it was just, what a friend. I admit so often to get some stuff on about a show. I mean, Leroy Neiman came down to one of my stand-up comedy performances, and he did a little drawing on me. He said, you know what? Hold on. No, I'm going to do something else. I don't know what happened to the little drawing. And about maybe a month later, something came in the mail, and it was a charcoal tri-photo done by Leroy Neiman. I'm looking at this room here, in the studio room, I call it. I have a Leroy Neiman reprint of Casey Stengel. I have a Leroy Neiman reprint from the cover of the Chavez and Whitaker fight autographed by both of them. Leroy did a book from the first Ollie Liston fight, and I took a bunch of pictures down there, and inadvertently, I got Leroy to autograph all of them. And it's my photography, with autographed by Leroy, you know, Leroy and Doc here. In the bedroom, I've got the other day when Evander was here, Leroy had did a little piece about Evander and Lennox, and I got Evander to sign it. If I get Lennox signed, and these were just things that I just tried to do unique stuff. Just baseball, Jackie Robinson. And my heart aches about Mrs. Robinson. 1997 when. Honoring the 50th year of Jackie, they had some down at the Museum of Natural History, and it gave us all of the media a ball with a Jackie Robinson autograph, facsimile. And I said, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get this ball autographed by guys who played with and against Jackie Robinson. And on that ball, as I remember, I got to look at it again, Joe DiMaggio's on there, Pee Wee Reese is on there, Phil Rizzuto is on there, Billy Martin is on there, I believe Whitey Ford is on there. And, you know, these things they're priceless to me because of the memories. And it just, you know, it's. I remember I asked Whitey Ford one time how he got the name Whitey. And he said Lefty Gomez gave him the name because his blonde hair reminded Gomez of the color white. So he started calling him Whitey Ford.
Dr. Funny, you should be reminiscing. You know, to this day, you're talking about Jackie Roosevelt Robinson and memories. You know, to this day, if you ask Yogi Berra, To this day, if you ask Yogi Berra,
yeah, it's funny you say that because Francis Vatino said he saw Yogi about 2 weeks ago, and he, Rooney, Lady A, he told Francis he was out then, he was out now. He's still out. Berra, back-to-back winners of MVP award, won MVP three times. There was a time when New York dominated not only the World Series championship, but the MVPs, 51, 53, 55. Roy Campanella, 49 Jackie Robinson, 47 Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra, 54-55, Willie Mays, 54. There's just some years that the American Athletic League MVP was the New York team. Berra and Campy won it in the same year. Yogi and Willie won it in the same year. Newcomb and Mantle, 54-55. You had 3 years in a row where the MVP...
Well, you know, you got to look at it like this, too, Doc. The Yankees will always be New York's primary team. I mean, the Mets have only been... I mean, they only really got into the league, what, in the 60s,
1964?
1962. 1962,
I'm sorry.
52, I mean...
54,
right,
Willie Mays MVP. 54, Campy was Yogi's MVP.
55, right, so.
Again, the MVP was Campy. And the MVP was Berra. 56, the MVP was Don Newcomb, and the MVP was Mickey Mantle. Go ahead, lady. You're talking about the Mets?
No, but my point is that, especially now, I mean, what's going on with the Mets, but, you know, back you could go back to, like, the early 1900s and see all that the Yankees have done, you know, through to now, and they've just had so much more time, you know, playing in the league than
well,
the Mets.
I mean,
you know,
well,
I mean, the Mets have won what,
the
two World
started
Series.
Out.
Two World Series. I mean, come on, two
well,
World
yeah,
Series. They won.
Yankees have won 27 World Series. They won 27 World Series.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
they've been around longer too.
Well, it's you know, there's I don't know that there's any validation to that in the fact that you know the Yankees, you know, when they started out, they won. All that hellacious, too. I mean, the turning point was them. They got a hold of the Babe, and people don't understand what, you know, they understand, you know, Babe, you know, that guy named Home Run Baker. I mean, the guy leading the league in home runs in those days was hitting four home runs a year. Here he is, here's the home run king. He hit one in September, and, you know, he hit those two back in April, and, man, he's leading the league. Next guy is two. I mean, you know, Babe was hitting more home runs by himself than whole
the entire team is locked out.
I mean, and then, you know, when before he hit 60, he hit 59. That's astronomical. When Babe Ruth retired from baseball, Babe Ruth had 714 home runs. Okay. The nearest guy was like 300 home runs away. Mel Ott. When Mel Ott retired from baseball, Mel Ott hit 511 home runs. That was the National League record. 511. Babe Ruth had 203 more home runs than the all-time home run leader in the National League. 203.
And that wasn't even a full-time player at the time when he started off as a pitcher.
Right.
They said Babe could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher as well as a Hall of Fame everyday player. You know, I mean, you know, George Herman. Now, it was believed. There's a book now, Only the Ball Was White. It is believed by many that Babe had some African-American blood in him. It was thought in Major League that Babe was a brother, getting over. Great book, Only the Ball Was White. Thought Babe was a brother getting over. Babe was a great guy, Howie Evans, and a lot of kids talk about how, you know, Babe was colorless. No, he was about the kids. And you know, one of the things that broke Babe's
heart was
somebody
was saying he used to always go and take the kids out to get candy.
Yeah. I mean,
But I heard it was candy too, like candy. That's why he came out with the candy bar, Babe Ruth.
Well, actually, the candy bar was not named after Babe Ruth, as it was named. If I'm correct, it was named after, I don't think President Truman's daughter, but it's named after maybe Woodrow Wilson. The Baby Ruth was named after the daughter of a president. Now, I'm thinking Truman's daughter, but Babe Ruth was no longer playing when Truman was there. Well, Truman came after telling. It may be Truman's daughter, and it may be Woodrow Wilson's daughter, but the baby Ruth is named after a president's daughter. Now, ironically, you should say that. Doc Stanley's pulling up on the Blake Rainbow Soul channel. Boys Never Show. Remember they had that Reggie Bar Rooney?
Yeah, back in the day.
I like the Reggie Bar.
I tell you what I have in the Sports Net Hall of Fame.
Caramel nuts. Pretty good.
And, you know, the thing, and just, you know, the thing, it shows the blessing, and I hope the uniqueness. I have an autographed Reggie Jackson, Reggie Bar autograph.
So, Doc, you better not let me come over there and see it, because I see that bar beating it.
No, hey, no, listen, there ain't no candy, though, ain't no candy, but I got, and in fact, I have a Reggie, you know, they had a day for Reggie, you know, it's just amazing, I can only find one of them darn posters, they had Leroy Neiman.
Well, that Reggie bar actually was basically the Nestle's Crunch with Caramel. Well, pretty tasty,
really?
Doc. Wasn't bad.
My
brother got sick. He hid in the closet to eat that thing.
Really?
Yeah, like my mother was looking around after we have a Halloween. Like, the day after Halloween, we had a shopping bag full of chocolate.
Right.
He went into the closet, and he hid for like an hour, and he ate all the chocolate. And my mother was panicking because she couldn't find him. And all she heard was like, in the closet. Oh, he puked it all out, guy. He was eating all those candies.
It's amazing that you say that because I could only find one Reggie Bar rapper. And I could only find one Leroy Neiman Reggie reprint that particular time.
You can still get those candy bars, right?
Yeah.
Where?
But
store downtown in Manhattan.
Really?
Really?
Reggie autographed the rapper for me, and he autographed. I have a Reggie Jackson, Leroy Neiman reprint autographed by both him and Leroy. You know what's funny? I remember when they traded Catfish to the Yankees. And I'm doing an interview with Reggie, and Reggie says, with Catfish going, Sal Band over there, he's got a knock on another. 8 or 9 more runs. Rudy's got to knock another 12 runs. I got to hit another 4 or 5 home runs. You know what I mean? So I said, Reg, I remember the question. I said, a lot of people say that the Catfish is, you know, very reminiscent and very similar in style to Robin Roberts. And Reggie, Reggie had done well. He looked at me. He says, I can't answer that question because I never hit against Robin Roberts. Reggie, he wouldn't even tell the story of the night that Reggie hit the 3 home runs. That Reggie told him he's on the field with Reggie, and Reggie told him, I'm going to do something special tonight. And Leroy said, Reggie, you always say that. He said, no, Leroy, I got a feeling. I'm going to do something so I can feel it. And Leroy said, Reggie, you always say that. So he did 3 different pitches, 3 first pitches, and 3 home runs. Reginald Martinez Jackson. And ironically, I think I told the story of Fujo. He was the number one draft pick for the Mets, and the Mets said they weren't going to take him. They weren't going to take him because his wife was a light Hispanic, Latin lady, and they thought she was white, as was Vic Power. You know, Vic Power was really going to be the first player taken by the Yankees, but Vic, who is, I think he's Cubano, Puerto Rican, his wife might have been Dominican or Cubano, but she looked like a Blanquita. For those who speak Spanish, you know what I mean. For those who don't, it means she looked white. So the Yankees didn't take Vic, because they thought his wife was white, you know. It's just amazing. You look back some of the things that African Americans and Latins have went through.
About it. Please.
Yeah, yeah, and
stories
still going.
Endless.
It's staggering because you have less black plays in baseball. I was told. I got to get this guy in the show. I was told by this gentleman.
Now you have a lot less also, Doc, no? I mean, I think now you have a lot less also, statistically. I think that's why they're trying to bring back. Blacks in baseball,
it's no question. The blacks.
Yeah, I think you have more Latin ball players.
That's what it is. And you're right, because I remember the old days, third base, Greg Niddle, shortstop, Rafael Santana, second base, Willie Randolph, first base, Chris Chambliss, behind the plate, Thurman Munson, center field, Mickey Rivers, right field, Jackie, Reggie Jackson.
Or Lou Piniella was out there, too.
Or Piniella, but Reggie was starting, and then in left field, Dave Winfield.
Right.
You know, and you had Cliff Johnson was on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You had Oscar
mm-hmm.
Gamble. Now, I mean, and what happens is, and Terry Hunter had a good story, too, about that, you look out there, And Bernie Williams was in the field with it. Bernie Williams is black, but he's a black Hispanic. You know,
right.
He's half black, half white. You look over at shortstop, A-Rod is Hispanic. You know what I mean? Third base, mm-hmm. A-Rod is Hispanic. Robinson Cano, he's darker than Derek Jeter, but Derek Jeter's African-American, and he's not. So, you know, I remember telling Ken Griffey Jr. One time, I said, you know what? You have less black players in baseball today than you had 20 years ago. And,
absolutely.
And the numbers are staggering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just something to have. But it was that jacket, that the boxing jacket I was talking about, it has, there's just not that, the McEnroe racket, the first Leroy Neiman reprint, some of the Ollie stuff, that jacket, there's not, I want you to name some boxing champions, Lady A, and I'm most likely on the jacket. Just riff off some names, just names.
Well, I know right off the bat your boy Roberto Duran's on there.
Yeah, well, Duran's the greatest Latin player. Fight. Go ahead, Duran. Go ahead.
Okay. Duran, Camacho.
Go ahead.
Laporte.
Mm-hmm.
Wilfred Benitez.
Oh, yeah. The great Wilfred Benitez. Youngest man to ever win.
Wilfredo Gomez.
Gomez,
a tremendous rumbler.
Bazooka.
Who else? Let me see. Just Hispanic, or you just want me to just name anybody?
No, everybody. Well, yeah, you know them all. Well, you can name the Latin. No, that'd be nice. Latin. No, we do the Latins. Do the Latins. That'd be good. I've never had that angle. Do the Latin fighters. Yeah. Good.
Pepino Cuevas.
Mm-hmm.
Julio Cesar Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Chavez.
God, I'm trying to think of this other guy. Very, what's his
you
name?
You are forgetting, Lady A, a dynamite little fighter. One of the little men, but tremendous.
Oh, what's this guy's name?
Also,
that he was Cuban. Or he was also a Kid Chocolate. He was one too. He was Kid Chocolate. I'm trying to think of his name.
You think of Kid Gavilan?
Kid Gavilan. Gavilan.
You know,
I'm sorry.
But you know what? Gavilan was like in the fit. But you're right. BoJack and Kid Gavilan. I met at a Ring 8. Affair.
I'm
and
not
you're
even
right.
trying.
Kid
to, you
hear
what he said? Yeah, I met him too. I'm not even trying to come up with no more names, man.
Well, let me come up.
You got
let me
all
come
these
up
autographs?
With some. Well,
huh?
Let me come up with. Let me come up with some, Doc. Let me say
what,
a couple of ladies. Let me start.
What?
Let me start with.
Hold on,
gang.
Hold on. Doc Stanley Sports Dev on the Blake with another Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Dev show. It is How I Got It, When I Got It, along with Black History Month. Happy birthday, John Patrick McEnroe and the crew. As we're talking about who's on the jacket. Go ahead. I'll tell you how I got it. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Let me start with a tremendous little fighter who no one ever speaks of anymore, who is awesome, who lost a Rocky type of fight to Wilfredo Gomez when he was moving up from the 118-pound crown, trying to win the junior featherweight at 122, challenging Wilfredo Gomez, who was then the junior featherweight champion, the great Lupe Pintor.
Oh, I got his autograph. Good guy.
You know what? You know what? That, you know, Rooney, I had to make you hang up. You shouldn't have did that. No, you know what? Lupe.
You don't got him? There you
I've never met Lupe Pinto. I remember Pinto Gomez with a tremendous fight. I remember Pinto. Gomez knocked him down. Pinto spit out the mouthpiece and said, that's it. No, Lupe Pinto is one of the guys that's not on that jacket.
There you go, Mel. You won.
Keep going. He didn't win.
Thank you, lady. No, Pintor was tremendous, tremendous.
He was.
And
he was.
Let me throw some more awesome ones that he ate. Like
the rest
on
it,
the great Bobby Chacon, who had absolute bona fide wars with Ray Mancini and Cornelius Boza Edwards. Bobby Chacon.
Now Mancini's on there, Cornelius Edwards is on there, but Chacon is not.
How about Pazienza? Is he there?
Who?
Vinny Pazienza.
Vinny Pazienza is on the gang. If you want, you want to do Mike on Lights Out for a while?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports in the Show, How and When I Got It, Nigo Leagues, and we'll probably add some other stuff here as we will move it to Mike on Lights Off. They're here. The one and only Lady A, the incomparable Mel Cosell, speaking of what? Larry Hardesty is going to bring us out and bring us back. And we'll do another half hour. If you feel like talking, if you feel like listening, DocStanleySports.com. Go on the site. See what you like. Hit us. Remember, we're here on the Blake Radio Network. Donation, BlakeRadio.com. We could use it. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network. Three thoughts. Live like today and to stand before God tomorrow. Life, for the system, for the urgent questions. What are you doing for others? Service to others. Let me pray for your space on earth. Larry Hardesty, I can't hear you.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Hey, Doc, I got another name for you.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blake Radio Network, mic on. Lights off, Lady A, Mel, Little Cup Girl, Cassell Smith Jr. It is How I Got It, When I Got It. We're talking about the sports artifact, the Doc Stanley Trust got a Hall of Fame, and soon the Negro Leagues, and we move other aspects of Black History Month, and that we were talking about education and some other aspects. A prayer. Dear Lord, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the cross. Thank you for Christmas. Thank you for heaven. Thank you for being our God. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for blessings unseen, unmerited, forthcoming, and about to be. Amen, God, and Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Sports Depth is the show.
I got another name for you, Doc.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
It's a Friday night in the Big Apple, New York City, and we are here with the First Lady of Sports and incomparable in both intellect and beauty, Lady A. Hey, he just brings so much. He's the voice of the Sports in Depth Nation, our official greeter, the man who is always there with the right words and introduction and greetings, Mel Rooney Cassell Smith, right-hand man and friend of none other than Tyrone. Mike, was it Mike? Mike Gerard Tyson.
We
want to open by, once again, our sympathy to the Whitney Houston family and the Gary Carter family. And as we look back at the month, we've lost Whitney, Gary Carter, we lost Don Cornelius, and we sent out the sympathy.
Great Joe Frazier.
Family smoking Joe, who we lost not so recently. Also,
Angelo Dundee.
Angelo Dundee, this month, the right hand man of Ali. I remember Angie, just what a great human being. We again thank Bert Sugar for being with us on that show. But we're back to this show. Mic on, lights off. It's a Friday. We've got some time here. Never put up tomorrow, what you can do today. So we've got the crew. And we're talking
more
about
names. More names for the jacket. I got somebody to go
names,
back.
Okay.
What
now? Now, what the point?
I got a name for you. I got a few names for you. Few names.
Okay. Listen to How I Got It. We bought a jacket in Arizona, working for Don King, with being security with Tony Tucker. When I got it back in 1993, and I've had it inundated with, I think, is an incomparable list of. You know what I'm going to do? Hold on. I got the jacket right here. I'm going to read the names off.
No.
But,
let us keep trying to guess.
Okay, but you know, okay, but so well,
okay.
For, ladies being
okay,
first,
I'm gonna give you another name. I'm gonna give you another
go ahead,
name.
Go ahead,
Alexis Arguello.
Oh, he's there. Oh yeah, Alexis there.
Carlos Monzon.
No, because Monzon had died before I could get to him. No, I didn't get Carlos. I know I saw Monzon live, but no, he's not on the jacket. But and
Carlos
then
I got one for you. I got
Carlos
one for you.
Carlos Ortiz.
Ortiz is there. Carlos is there.
Salvador Sanchez. God, you know, I got rest in peace.
Well, no, he had died. He had died. I
brought a great light heavy doc by the name of Vero Yaki Lopez.
Your brother's never a champion. Nobody on the jacket. There's only one guy on the jacket. Everybody on the jacket is a champion, with the exception of there's only one non-fighter on the jacket and one guy who didn't become a world champion. The one non-champion is Ober Carr, because I was out and I had somebody on the jacket, and he was young and up and coming. He was also managed by Roy Holloway, and John Horn. I said, this guy's going to be a champion. And down at Atlantic City one evening, none other than my friend Joseph Paul DiMaggio. And hello, Mr. DiMaggio. Art Russ said hello. Is Arthur here? And he was signing some stuff for some fans, and I didn't have a piece of paper. So, Mr. DiMaggio, put a jacket in. No problem. And he said to me, and that's a good one. He was always so wonderful to me. So, no, Lopez is not on there, but continue.
Oh, man, this guy got...
There's so many stuff.
All right,
I'm sorry, lady.
Go ahead. Manuel Ortiz. I definitely don't got that one.
Who's that?
Manuel Ortiz.
Manuel Ortiz?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Carlos Ortiz.
No, you don't have Ortiz, yeah.
Yeah, Carlos
Ortiz.
Ortiz. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Damn. How about...
Hey, Doc, I have a question, Doc. Pardon me, lady. I got a question for you, Doc. Now, I don't expect any of these guys to be on the jacket. No, are they Latin fighters? But I just wanted to salute these guys because no one ever talks about them.
But
to me, they were tremendous, tremendous fighters in their day, Doc.
Good.
Doc, what are your thoughts of the great... I thought the guy was great. No one ever talks about him. Great light heavyweight champion, Matthew Saad Muhammad.
Come on, man.
I tell you about Matthew Saad. He's on the jack. Tell you about Matthew Saad Muhammad. Matthew Saad. Now, and you know, Rooney, you always do this, which just proves to just how unique and special you are. You know, it just flows. You just mentioned Lopez, and you mentioned Matthew Saad. And Dusty, way before he became part of here, and, well, you know, Dusty... He's the brother-in-law to my ex-wife, and at the time it was a Sunday. I grabbed Mel and Turquoise, and we were going to Jersey or somewhere to visit family members, back to barbecue. And Matthew Saad was fighting Yaki Lopez, and Yaki Lopez was beating Matthew Saad from pillar to post. And then at about the 12th round, Matthew Saad came on. Won the fight as either TKO in the 14th or 15th round, and they brought over Yaki Lopez first. And Yaki Lopez looked fresh as a day. He said, he's a great champion. I just got tired of hitting him. Now, Matthew Saad was going to fight Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, who at one time was Eddie the Flying Gregory. They had said, being Muslim brothers, they would never combat each other in the ring. But Harold Smith... he had a dynamite card set for the guard. I remember the press conference, and it was, the headline was going to be Gentleman Jerry Cooney against Kenny Norton, with the undercard having Matthew Saad Muhammad against Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, and just to make sure you didn't feel cheated, Tommy Hearns against Wilfred Benitez.
Oh my God.
And Lady A, all of them were going to make more money than they had ever made. Each and every fighter on that card was getting their top payday ever.
Which was a good point. It was the reason why that Matthew and Muhammad said they would finally meet in the ring, because it would be two brothers from the nation against each other and being remunerated at the highest level possible above their careers. I mean, and the fight was going to be at Madison Square Garden. Oh,
you know, Doc, man, I really wish they would really do. I mean, it's sad that they haven't done anything to try to restore the luster of boxing in, like, Madison Square Garden.
Well,
you see,
Harold was so right. You know, when he said it died when he left, and you understand when John Condon passed away. Okay, Harold left. Now, Bobby Goodman tried so much to do stuff in there, but I remember Steve Smith. Steve Griffin, who was the head PR guy at the Garden Den. And Steve, we were talking one day, and Steve said, Doc, you know, the powers that be are here. I'm not concerned about boxing anymore. I mean, you know, if you have it, it's good. If you don't have it, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know,
right.
it was no longer the... Actually, one of the show places, they didn't care.
They didn't care anymore.
And I remember, when a guy like the great Eric Gilfan left, you know, who was part of the heritage and the residue of the Condons and the Goodmans, and, he left. I mean, the Garden now, you can rent the Garden. But, I mean, like I said, I mean, the Garden had two fights a month, okay, or at least one a month. And the thing about it, Lady A, you loved it. Rooney was, I think Rooney caught the tail end of it. I mean, the old felt for him. And the thing about the old felt for him is you
saw. Yeah, remember that's where we went to see the other fight. Remember when we went to the Donaire fight and you were like, look, Lady A, there's not one bad seat here.
No, yeah, right. Right, see, but the
thing. Is that the same Donaire that beat, was that the same Donaire that beat the, Lady A, it was that really hard driving. It was like a little Mike Tyson, always coming forward, always coming forward. And I believe Donaire beat him for the, I think it was Victor Chinian.
Well, not to, I think he to win the title, he locked out Fernando Montiel.
Well, wasn't there a Donaire
who
beat up
fought,
Victor Chinian when he was undefeated?
I think they fought, but I wasn't on, the fight with Fernando Montiel is what put Donaire on the map.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Montiel, I believe, was a title holder at the time when he beat him.
Good job.
Yeah. Mm. Victor Chinian, the big thing with Victor Chinian is the low blows that always come up with him. That's a big thing that always comes up, Rooney. You know that, right? Because remember when he had that fight?
Yeah.
Remember when he had that fight with Agbeko? Was it Agbeko? Was it Agbeko that he fought?
That,
or was, no,
yeah,
not
so
Agbeko. The other guy, Mahrez. Remember Mahrez and Agbeko? Remember Mahrez and Agbeko fought and they had 22 low blows in that fight?
I do.
Okay. I think that when he fought.
That's when he lost the title, I think. Was that the one?
I think he fought.
Who was the one, Lady A, where the African guy was defending his title? I'm sorry, I can't recall his name. I think they were a higher weight class.
Uh-huh.
And he had gotten hit, I counted, with at least 20 low blows, and the ref never took a point.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, that was the fight on Showtime. Agbeko and Mahrez. Right,
mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Edwin Mahrez, right. Right. And then they had a second fight also. And I believe that Mahrez won that fight also.
Yeah. You hear them, Lady A and Mel Cosell. How I got it, when I got it, salute to the Negro Leagues, as we continue Black History Month and continue Mike on Lights Off, boxing experts, aficionados unparalleled right here.
And, Doc, let me mention the name since you're talking about boxing. Another guy that no one ever mentions ever was a tremendous fighter, maybe one of the top five punchers in heavyweight history. I believe he was known as the old acorn, Ernie Shavers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Ernie.
I got his autograph, too.
Really? Yeah, I have Ernie's here. Ernie was first brought into prominence by Don King. Ernie Shavers, Jeff Merrick, Sandy Slim. I love him like a son. And Ray Patterson. They were all parts of that Don King stable. Ernie, I, a couple of occasions, it was funny. Ernie was the last guy that Ali beat at Madison Square Garden. Yeah.
I'll tell you one guy that I really want to get his autograph because he's getting up there in age. And when I was up there with one of my buddies last time, we just call him, Yoda, Master Yoda. Because he's, every time you see him, all he does is wave with his white, silvery hair. Jake LaMotta. That's one guy I got to get before he decides.
Who's that?
Him and Carmen Basilio, the two guys I got to get their autographs before
Basilio
they...
Basilio and who?
And Jake LaMotta.
Now, both guys, okay?
Don't tell me you got him on the jacket. I'll be disgusted. Don't say that.
Jake LaMotta's on the jacket.
See?
What I have is, I was at a fair one night, and I got a nice shot with Basilio and Archie Moore. And, yes, Archie Moore's on the jacket. And I also have a nice picture that I put together which has an autograph both of Carmen Basilio and Archie Moore. Archie Moore's on the jacket. Basilio, I haven't ran into him yet, but he's not on the jacket.
When I went up with C-Wings to IBHOF, he was there.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, they're all up there then. Most of the guys I have.
Lady A, do you know how crazy Jake really was in real life? You know how crazy he was, Lady A?
I don't know how crazy he was, but I'll tell you this. He's Master Yoda to me. Because I saw him, I said, is that him? And he was just waving, like,
And everybody was, like, you know, he waves at the people, and he was walking because, you know, somebody helps him to walk.
Lady A.
Jake LaMotta told
Jake
me.
Jake, sorry, Doc. Please go ahead.
No, you got it, Ronnie. Jake told me that Ray Robinson was the best, and he said I fought Sugar Ray Robinson so much that I should have sugar diabetes.
I remember that.
Go
ahead, Ronnie. Let me tell you how crazy Jake really was, Doc. He wasn't just content with handing Robbie, I believe, his first loss ever and fighting him, what, 5 or 6 times. He wasn't just content with that. Do you know that very talented, very crazy man was actually ticked off because in his prime, Doc, in Lady A, guy wanted to fight Joe Louis.
What?
I wanted to fight Joe Louis.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, in the movie, which I believe it was Robert De Niro playing, and
yeah.
I think it was Joe Pesci or somebody playing his
brother. Yeah, Joe Pesci's brother.
Brother. And said, man, you can't fight Joe Louis. He's an animal.
I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal.
I tell you, I also got a chance to meet his wife, Vicky LaMotta.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I met her. Yeah, Jake LaMotta, who won, beat, if I'm correct, he beat Marcel Sedan in the closing minutes of that fight. The great Frenchman, Marcel Sedan. They were going to have a rematch, but Sedan got killed in a plane crash.
Hey, Doc, let me ask you a question, because I remember I told you I was going to ask Burt Sugar. You know, these guys are legends. I never had a chance to really see them box. You know, and sometimes you guys know I spend countless hours watching old video.
Oh, yeah.
But I haven't been able to get my hand on. How good was Willie Pep?
Well, Burt, okay, you know, it's funny you say that because I have a, where's that thing I just, you know.
Because remember, like I told you.
Oh, my goodness.
Joe Louis
and
Willie Pep. You got Joe Louis number 4. He had Joe Louis number 4, and he had Willie Pep ranked number 3. And I'm like,
In round one, there's a great magazine done by our good buddy. The summer 2010 issue where we had Manny Pacquiao on the cover. I was honored and really flattered that my good friend, the man who brought us into who brought round one into existence, and he had asked me to hey Doc, he says, you know, he had lunch and he called, he said, look Doc, I want you to I want you to help me on this thing here. He said, I want you to put the synopsis for a horde of these fights. Lamar Clark, who is the publisher of Round One, so the summer issue has Manny Pacquiao on the cover, and Steve Farwood does the story, the 5 most significant fights in history, and then in each of those pages on the below, there's a little champion forever, 100 years of boxing, where I have I put my synopsis. He asked me, Doc, I just want you to put some special facts about the fighters. And the first one I have is that Mickey Walker won the middleweight title on December 3rd, 1926, when he beat Tiger Flores, the former welterweight champion, held the middleweight crown for 5 years. June 18, 1929, Panama Al Brown became the first Latin world champion, defeating Victor Gregorio for the bantamweight title. It's a measure they said because Benny Lynch won the world flyweight champion in September 1935. He defeated champion Jackie Brown to become the very first world boxing champion in Scotland's history. Now, this is what triggered me to get to this, because you, on November 11, 1946, with a record of 52-0, okay, Willie Pep defeated Chuckie Wright for the featherweight championship of the world, 52-0.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, now the only guy that I remember who was more, as you would say, his record was more, as the kids would say, stupid or whack, was Ray Robinson when he fought Tommy Bell for an undisputed welterweight champion. Ray Robinson came into the ring 77-0.
That's crazy.
Wow, that's outrageous.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Ray Robinson came into the ring at 77-0. For 5 years, he couldn't get a title shot because they didn't want a black welterweight champion. He beat Tommy Bell a split decision. I've got that in here, too. Okay, here I am. Here, my goodness. I want to thank you. And the fact this is, I have this, I happen to have this round one, and it's hey, there's autographed by Pacquiao. I got to frame it, too. On December 20th, 1946, at Madison Square Garden, Sugar Robinson dropped Tommy Bell in the 11th round to capture the World Welterweight Championship. Okay? Now, here's another startling fact. On this June 20th, 1960, Floyd Patterson became the first man ever to regain the heavyweight championship of the world when he knocked out Ingemar Johansson. Now, little note of fact, both Ingemar Johansson and Floyd Patterson are on the jacket. Okay? I save you that question.
I hate you, Doc.
On June 2nd, 1981, Alexis Arguello became just the sixth man to win world titles in three different weight classes when he defeated English Jim Watt. Now, you know, people don't know. Arguello had to have some surgery done. And
Didn't he do something in his hand in that fight against Pryor?
Was that?
In that fight against Pryor, didn't he do something in his hand?
This fight here, when he became just the sixth man to win three different weight division titles, he had to have surgery done, and he had the surgery done while riding back by train to Nicaragua. Yeah. Tyson became on November 22nd, 1986, the youngest man ever to win the heavyweight championship of the world. The youngest man ever win it. Prior fight, the consensus by a lot of people were leaning toward Alexis because Pryor, in his unorthodox
the
style.
The Hawk, man.
The Hawk.
That's
was,
the Hawk.
You know,
the Hawk,
hey, I have
baby.
A story.
You used to call it Hawk
story.
Time, Doc.
You know, I gotta know if I can find it. I mean, you know what? I'm gonna let you talk. I'm going to find. Pryor came. They had a press conference in Madison Square Garden in the old press room, and it was. And I remember they destroyed the.
By the way, Doc, you said that the press room was where? Remember you were saying that they changed it.
Yeah. Madison Square Garden, the old press room, and they had a press conference. And I remember doing the story. I was writing for the legendary Big Red News. The plight of Aaron Pryor. Pryor couldn't get no fights. Nobody wanted to fight him.
Why?
He was too tough. And I think Pryor beat Tommy Hearns in the amateur. I mean, they said there was a night, man, that Pryor had fought like the third fight, and they needed somebody in the tenth fight. Hawk said, "Hey, I am. Here I am. I put my gear back on." I mean, when he beat Alexis the second time, Alexis said, "Man, you know, he's too big, too strong." I mean, the consensus was, you liked Alexis because Pryor always was falling down, but he was falling down because of his off balance and his unorthodox angles. He was throwing punches, so the other guy wasn't knocking him down. He was just falling.
Right.
You know? But,
hey, Doc,
let
me say this before you continue. I have to put this in part of the interruption. But you know something, Doc? That reminds me, thinking about Pryor, of a fight that would have captivated not only the country, but maybe the world in regard to fight fans, especially since they were both undefeated at the time. And I have a feeling that Pacquiao Mayweather not happening may go the way of this fight, which would have been great and never happened.
What's that?
An undefeated Aaron Pryor against, at the time, an undefeated Sugar Ray Leonard.
But hold on. I understand there's two different things. You know, and at this thing here, at this press conference, Hawk said that, you know, Ray wouldn't fight him. He was at a press conference.
That's what
Ray
he said,
like,
Doc.
Ray said, you know, Ray said, no. I mean, Ray had bigger fish to fry at a bigger price, and a lot like Pacquiao at a bigger price.
You know, it's amazing, y'all. You guys are saying this, and we're still talking about it. What, 20 some odd years later, about people picking their fighters.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. That's great. Remember Harold was saying that they almost made the fight, but he was trying to punk him, like to take money. Less than what he knew
he would deserve.
Howell
said they wouldn't pay him, lady. He said he fought Ray, but they wouldn't pay him.
Exactly.
Well, that's why Doc Stanley Sports Def on the Blake Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Def for the show. I spent some of the cool gang, some of the madness. I like that song. That's why I've said this. You know, and it's not something that I say a lot, but Bobby Miles and Harold has said this. And even there's a book. that, you know, they say there were certain fighters that Ray Robinson wouldn't fight. And that's why I say this, that Muhammad Ali, unequivocally, is the greatest heavyweight and the greatest fighter, because Ali fought everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He fought Joe Frazier 3 times. He fought Kenny Norton 3 times. He fought Ernie Shavers. He fought George Foreman. He fought Sonny Liston. He fought Floyd Patterson 2x. I mean, you know, everybody we're talking about is a Hall of Fame fighter. And you know, and Ali fought all those guys. I mean, Patterson's one
Oscar
guy that
Oscar Bonavina.
Oscar. I mean, and Oscar, and Ali fought all those guys when he wasn't the first Ali. Well, Patterson he fought. He fought Patterson before he got stripped. Then he fought him again after he got stripped. But that's why, and Duran's another guy. I mean, Duran fought everybody.
You knew that was coming, Mel. You knew that name was coming, Mel.
Lady A, I mean,
you
I'm
got a man crush on him. Admit it, man. Admit it, Doc. You got a man crush on him.
It's not. I mean, I don't understand
Doc.
You.
Doc, stop.
I don't understand
don't fight
you.
It, Doc.
Lady
Doc,
A.
Don't fight it.
I don't
fight
understand
it.
You. Hey, hold on.
You have a man crush on Roberto.
Hold on. Calm down, young lady. Do you know what Duran's record was? Do you know what Duran's record was when he fought Ray Leonard the first time?
Doc,
do you know what his record was? Huh?
Tell me. What's his record? Tell me.
72-1 when he fought Ray Leonard. Ray Leonard came in at 27-0, and Duran came in at 72-1.
Listen, I'm going to get a shirt made that says Las Manos de Piedra, so you can wear it on your shirt, okay? Where
you're
fine, said,
Lady A, you're so bad.
All right?
And Dr. Paul, remember that one loss that only come at the hands of Esteban de Jesus?
And no,
back
that.
In the day
no,
of
that.
As
when
a,
he
as
lost,
as
when
a
he lost to Esteban de Jesus, when he lost to Esteban de Jesus, he had taken the fight after having a car accident the week before. Angelo Dundee said that had Duran learned English, he'd have been more popular than Ali, which I don't buy that.
But
the thing is,
well, I don't think anybody's been more popular than Ali, but I get it.
There are a few guys in this sport, Lady A, 20 years later, if you say Duran, if you say Ali, you know who they're talking about. Duran,
oh, yeah,
Ali,
I mean,
was,
no doubt.
They were the 1 and 1A fighters of the generation. And I mean, Duran was the greatest Latin fighter that ever, and he carried the banner for Latin fighters when, I mean, he carried it for the Puerto Ricans, Dominicans. Now, Ali and Duran, those are my guys. Those are my guys.
Hey,
been,
I know you said Camacho was your guy, too.
Huh?
You said Camacho was your boy, too.
Oh, Hector. But
yeah, but he's not in the Duran class.
But
I mean,
hey,
Doc, that first rumble with Duran and Ray
Duran
is man crush for Doc. Hector is my man, and I love Hector. But it ain't that I love Hector less. I love Ali and Duran the best. You know, and Duran gave me a tremendous compliment. Yeah, and Dusty and Junebug, Steve Farwood. The thing I like about Steve Farwood, too, you know, if Steve doesn't know something, he will ask and find out. And this particular time, he said, you know, Roberto, I don't know a lot about you, so you know, could you tell me about yourself? And Duran and Cholo turned to me and told Farwood, ask him. He'll tell you, you know, and I found out I didn't know the guy
had
that.
He's been like that with you for years, though, Doc, too, because when we went to the press conference with Manny Pacquiao, I remember he threw the mic in your face and was asking you a couple of questions, too, about, you know, some specific boxing history and what you thought about certain fighters and, you know.
Farwood is, he used to be, he used to work for Ring Magazine, what they call the Bible of Boxing.
Yeah,
and you know, and that particular day, Duran said, you know, this guy here, you know, he always calls me Cholo, which brings back great memories. He's been at all my fights. I mean, Duran was, you know, Ali and Duran. I always said the other guys didn't win fights; they lost them at the Tommy Hearns. But Duran did. But then again, you know what? Not only Duran, Harold fought everybody. You know, that's why guys like Harold and Duran and Tommy and some of the old timers kind of frowned on Ray, because Ray picked and chose his guys to a certain degree.
Right. Well,
you know,
for the long, look at what happened with him. They thought there was going to be that fight with Leonard and Hagler, and he was going, and he even called a press conference and everything, and
yeah,
got everybody all worked up. You know what I'm saying?
But at that problem, see, Ray had an eye problem. Ray had a serious eye problem at that time. You know, in fact, he had just had to detect retina, and there was some talk about, hey, Ray.
But he doesn't have that retina problem, Doc. I think he goes on to be the second greatest welterweight of all time, next to Ray Robinson.
Well, I think Ray is the second. This is what Marion Boykin said, who was the greatest boxer of all time. He said when he picked the top four fighters of that era, it was Duran, Leonard, Hearns, and Hagler. And he said he picked Duran because you have to understand, Duran came up two weight classes. He came from 135 to 147, past his prime, to beat arguably the second greatest welterweight of all time, Ray Leonard. And he beat Ray Leonard. I mean, he beat Ray Leonard.
Didn't he win in four different weight classes, Doc? Wasn't it four that he won in?
Oh, yeah. Duran won lightweight.
Right?
Welterweight, junior middleweight, and middleweight.
It's four, right?
And on the way to the Ray Leonard fight, had stopped at 140 pounds to beat the way out of the former 140-pound champion, Carlos Palomino.
Mm.
Oh, Palomino.
Yeah. But, you know what? It's amazing. Doc Stanley sports there with
a
blazer.
Is he on a jacket?
Rainbow, who's that, Palomino?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there. I remember that fight on a Friday night. And the amazing thing about that fight was that Larry Holmes was headlining the card. I was in Larry Holmes' dressing room, and I'm watching the prelims, and Larry and Richard Jacchetti come in. They look at me, hey, how you doing? And nobody said, you got to go. Nobody said, leave. I don't know if they thought I was kidding. No, I left because Duran, I wanted to see the fight live. And I remember the look on Carlos Palomino's face at the end of the first round. When he came back and sat in the corner, his face said, you know what? This is not the place to be on a Friday night. Why didn't somebody tell me? And Duran won the fight, and afterward they asked him, so you know, you went the distance. Boom, boom, boom. Duran said, I could have took him out, but there's a carnival in Panama, so I just trained enough to beat the guy, you know. But, you know, he was just, and I think a lot of guys, you can't blame Ray Leonard. I mean, because Ray Leonard's resume says, okay, he beat every great fighter of his era. He beat Benitez to win the first title. Okay, then he turns around and he beat Duran. Then he turns around and beats Tommy Hearns. He's out 4 years, and he comes back and beat Marvin Hagler. I mean, we're not even talking about Andy Price, Kalule. Kaluli, and he also beat a big, big middleweight. I mean, you know, Ray was no chump.
Doc, don't forget, he also beat a guy that no one ever thinks of, who was a really tough journeyman fighter. And I really think that this fight is when Ray really came of age, when Ray said, you know, not only can I fight, but I'm one of the best out here. If I take this guy like that, Englishman named Dave Boy Green.
Who?
You always talk about Davey Boy, and if I'm correct, Davey Boy was his first defense as a welterweight champion. He knocked out Davey Boy in the first round. Am I right?
Yeah, first or second round. One thing about Davey Green, Doc, was he must have known as the best fighter, but he was a legitimate tough guy that would give you rounds, and he wasn't able to give Ray rounds. I mean, you know, Ray the quarterback like
Ray
a right
hand. If I got to be stuck with Ray Leonard, like I said, like Michael Jordan, if you got to tell me I got to be stuck with Michael Jordan as the greatest ever, I can deal with that. So, I mean, Ray Leonard beat every great fighter of his era.
He did, Doc, no doubt. Tommy Hearns,
Duran. To show you though how great Duran was, he's still number two to Duran on Borkin's list.
Is Wilfred on that jacket, Doc?
Oh, yeah, he's on the
jacket.
Yeah. Lady A, I believe that at the tender age of 16, he beat the legendary Antonio Cervantes.
He beat Kid Fambalay. And the thing about it, I asked Roberto, I said, you know, Roberto, how come you jumped from 135 to 140? Why don't you go to 140 and fight Kid Fambalay? And I remember because I asked him that after I'd come back from Panama. It's so funny. I'm looking for him in Panama. He's back in the States. But he had told us that they tried to make the Pombalet fight, but Pombalet really didn't want the fight, and he asked for, like, he wanted the big high percentage of the money, and, you know, so he did the kind of things like Ray did with Howell that you could take. Barry Bonds told me, excuse me, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network, the show, mic on, lights off. And I asked Barry, I said, you know, the Yankees, did they offer you a contract? He said, yeah, they offered me a contract, but they offered me a contract in such a way that I couldn't take it.
Mm.
And so, you know, so that's what happened with that fight. But, you know, you talk about Ray, but, you know, I think when you look at Ali.
Edwin Rosario, he's on the jacket?
Who's that?
Edwin Rosario.
Chapo Rosario, yeah.
I think Chapo's on here. I got to look on the list. I think, you know what? I tell you, if he's not on the jacket, he may be. I think Chapo is. But I tell you what he is on. He's on his boxing glove, I'm hoping, in front of me. He's on his boxing glove in front of me that says, to my friend Melvin, Edwin Chapo Rosario, world champ, three
whatever.
Times. He's on the glove. He's on the glove. Hey, Lady A, he's in the house.
Yeah. He's in the museum.
Talk about,
yeah. What's
that, Doc, Lady A, to this day they talk about that rumble at the Garden with him and Hector Macho Camacho.
I bet you Doc was at that fight.
I was there, and what I remember was the press conference afterwards. They had this, you know, but the thing about that fight, you know, it shows the ignorance of the so-called experts. It shows that, you know, Edwin Rosario could not go 12 rounds and outbox Hector Camacho. How is Edwin Rosario going to go 12 rounds and show how guys go? How are you going to? He couldn't outbox Hector Camacho. Now, if you stop the fight after 3 or 4 rounds, maybe. But no one. So somebody said, well, you know, he hurt Hector. Big deal, he hurt Hector. So the guy hit a 3-run home run off me. I won the game 7-3. Big deal. I gave him a home run. I can't give him a home run to win the game.
That's like the Mosley fight. Oh, he rocked him in the third round. Rock Mayweather in the third round. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And he didn't close out the fight. He didn't close out the fight.
Exactly.
And you know what's crazy, too? I was telling guys, when you saw the Ricky Hatton Mayweather fight, he fought that fight. Like I was telling everybody, they got to fight. They got to fight Mayweather. Take him inside because he obviously, if you fight him outside, he's going to have his speed. So, the anyone who understands science and pulleys and levers understands that, you know what? The shortest distance between two points, right, is a straight line. You're right in front of the guy. You know, you got to fight him right in front of him. Take away his speed. No, everybody tries to box him on the inside, stick and move, do all this nonsense. He's entirely too fast for that. You retard.
Lady A.
He starts fighting him that way and ends up losing. What round did he lose in, Mel? Like what? The seventh round, sixth round? He gets knocked out?
Yeah. But hey, tell me this. Does Floyd Mayweather Jr. beat Ray Leonard?
I don't think so, Doc. I don't think he has the punching powder. I think he's just as fast as Floyd.
I need a yes or no.
I don't think so, Doc.
Does Floyd Mayweather Jr. beat Tommy Hearns?
No.
No.
Absolutely, unequivocally, without any doubt, no.
What he gets is knocked out. That's what he gets.
Exactly.
Does Floyd Mayweather Jr. beat Duran?
No.
No.
Does he beat Aaron the Hawk Pryor?
No.
Don't think so.
Nope.
Don't get me wrong, Doc.
Don't get me wrong, that Floyd is great for his day. He's fast.
Go ahead.
He's a great defensive fighter. He's a flash. But when the guys that you mentioned to me, Doc, are all-time greats.
But you're missing one key thing here.
What's that?
The key thing is that you can have all the speed and all the movement and all the flash in the world, but when you hit somebody, you got to hit them to hit them. And when Mayweather hits guys, he's not rocking their world.
I want you to stop right there because right again, now you have to marry me next week. Emmanuel Stewart.
Hey, Doc, what about my proposal?
I beat you to it.
It's too late. He got Duran. It's too late. He got the man crush on Duran. You can't.
You know what? And this is why, when you listen, as we're in the archive section, you're listening to genius. You're listening to people who know what they're talking about. And it's the sad thing about our society today. That's a problem in sports today. That's the same problem you have in boxing. People who are in positions of merit and so-called expertise who are not, who are leading people astray. And that happens. Now, you said, now, Emmanuel Stewart said the same thing you said, because the way that Mayweather had Mosley on the ropes, Ray Leonard would have finished him, Hearns would have finished him, Duran would have finished him, Hawk would have finished him. Sugar Shane Mosley would have not went 12 rounds with Duran, Leonard, Benitez, Hearns, Pryor, Harold Weston, Emil. He would have not went the distance. They would have took him out. And you know, the thing about Floyd doesn't have the killer punch or the killer instincts that Lady A just said. He don't have it. I think
all around, you know, when we look at boxing, you know, everybody says, all right, yeah, boxing's all about hit, not get hit. Yeah, but you know what it is, too? It's about finishing. It's about closing. You mm-hmm. got to be able to close the show. And to me, you know, I've seen a lot of fights where I've seen Mayweather, you know, in that ring, and you guys say it all the time. Hey, you know, yeah, he's a boxer. Okay, what's the definition of a boxer? A guy that hits
and
doesn't
get
hit, right? But also a guy that closes. Okay, you can't tell me you got a guy like Tyson in a ring. He's an animal, pretty much destroys these guys when he gets in the ring. That's a boxer. But people want to see that. You know what I'm saying? People also want to see that. It's nice to have the flash and the flare and
you
all that.
You know what? Again, Lady A,
see
once again, validating that the marriage will last forever because Emmanuel Stewart is saying what you said. Emmanuel Stewart said, I couldn't wait to get home on a Friday night
there
to see Mike Tyson knock somebody out.
That's it.
I didn't know who
people
it was.
People want to see knockouts.
I didn't know who it was, but I couldn't wait to get home on a Friday. And let me tell you something.
Let me ask you something, Mel. Why do you think MMA has been able to take away so many of the boxing fans?
Because they don't
have
Michael Seller telling me, Doc. Mel? Rooney?
Doc.
You know what? I was in Brazil.
Oh, man, with the capoeira out there.
And I was on a show, and the guy asked me that, because Jason Cotamacio Jr. said, you know, we got Doc Stanley here, a boxing connoisseur. And you know, so the guy asked me, what do you think about M&A? You know, why is boxing dying? I said, well, M&A. I said, why people like M&A? Because, first of all, you get a quality fight. The best are always fighting the best. That's why you like it. And they don't know about boxing anymore. So here I am. You got number one fighting number two. Number two, you know, you ain't got number one fighting somebody never heard of.
Doc, what you're saying, and this is something. As a matter of fact, you know, I wasn't able to finish, but when I went to get the hats done today for Sports In Depth, out in Riverhead, Long Island, at Tangier Mall. So many props to Justin and Dan for doing the hats for me today.
Give them a plug, baby.
What we're going to do now,
every show, we have a segment. We're going to say this portion of Sports In Depth is brought to you by, we give them a plug from now on, okay?
Okay. And, you know, and talking to the guys, because, you know, I always talk to guys sports, and, you know, we're kicking and talking about the fight, Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather, how it's not going to happen. I said, let me ask you guys a question. And at that moment, I was wishing I was Dr. Melvin Stanley with my tape recorder, because they said to me, and I said to them, why do you think it's dying? And you know what they said to me? 100% agreed with this. It's because when you pay $60 for a fight to see a card, you don't want to wait 4 hours, okay, number one, to see the prime match, the main event.
Yeah.
In MMA, every single fight, you see knockouts. Number two, judges, you think people are stupid? You know, when people see people getting their behinds handed to them, they know who won the fight. No. Mm. In boxing, you know, we've known with these controversies what's been going on. In MMA, it doesn't make it to the judges.
Lady A, call them and tell them if you want them to be on the show Sunday and say the same thing they told you.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
Yeah, but you know, you brought up a great point.
People do not make it up to the third round. They're getting knocked out. That's what people want to see.
You know, a tremendous point you bring out that I've never even thought about, and you're right. And think about that card we had to sit through. Pacquiao, adios mio, come with me.
Cotto Marbolo.
Man, we had to go through those long, but you're right. Now, people are falling asleep. People are getting drunk. Yeah, what a tremendous point. There's no boring. You know what? Rooney, the only guy that gave you an undercard that wasn't was Don King. I'll never forget Robert Lee Jr. out of Vegas. It's the first card of the night. I see Robert rushing ringside. Because they were always on the sports box. I said, Bob, where you going? He said, hey, man, we got the first fight on the card. It's a championship fight. The first fight on the card. Maybe Don should go to M&A. The first fight on the card was a championship fight. Don King, Harold Weston, gave you cards that you got there early. Like he said to Teddy Brenner, people were lined up early. And you bring a point that is so valid, Lady A.
That's why you got us, Doc. That's why you got us. We bring up good points.
Hey, I got you because good Lord brought you to me, baby. Can't do better than that.
There you go.
You're the best to ever do it. We probably got to close, but I didn't think we were going to do two.
Hey, Doc, I know we've been on this in excess probably of an hour or two now.
We did 90 minutes. We're almost two hours now.
Let me finish, Doc. But in all honesty, okay, not bragging, but the truth is the truth, and you know your panel speaks the truth. On behalf of me, myself, obviously, the great Lady A, you, and part of the panel that's not here right now, damn it, our fans want more damn time, to be honest with you. This has been great. Our fans want more time, Doc. Let's tell it like it is. Let's not go around acting all hush-hush-hush-hush.
I was only going to do the thing here, but I happened to get... to the lead of the panel here, you know what I mean? I mean, I didn't have to play that part about the opinions expressed by him, that of not, you know, because Dusty ain't here, you know, so I had to worry about that. But had I known we were going to be this long, you know what? Maybe tomorrow we can sneak in another one of these shows before Saturday.
It's not just our big egos, but with all due respect, our
all right,
fans
know what,
are demanding
what we're
gonna
it, do. Doc. We're going to see if we can do another one tomorrow. Because Lady A, so if you're off, we'll close this out in a few minutes, and we'll get some more of the panel in. But I mean, you know, Lady A is just mind-boggling.
It's true though, Doc. It's true.
But what you just said,
it's
and then
true.
Rooney, I mean, you know, somebody told me, they said, you know, Doc, if you're staying on 2 hours or 2 days, it still wouldn't be enough with you and your.
It really wouldn't, Doc.
They said it wouldn't be. I mean, it's the education that's here. I mean, and then, you know, we talked about McEnroe. Here's a guy whose number one hero in life is Nelson Mandela.
And you know what I was going to tell you, Doc? You're talking about John McEnroe, and I meant to say this before. I'm sorry, but I hate to do this because I get things in my head and then I forget. But one of the greatest matches I think that I've ever seen John McEnroe play was John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors. At the U.S. Open.
Oh, yeah, when he won in five sets.
Oh, and they were going back and forth, man. That last set, oh, my goodness. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I tell you, that was one of the greatest. I said the second probably was seeing Gabriella Sabatini and Chris Evans.
John McEnroe is on his game. There was nobody better than him. I mean, he could play the baseline. He could play the net. He had that wicked serve.
And his forehand down the line was insane.
And not only that, you know, Mike Lubica said, you know, you would hit this dynamite hot serve, and like he had the best of his hands, he'd just take this thing out your serve, just drop it off the point. Here you go. Come on, man. That great line that I read one time, that the best double team in the world in tennis
John McEnroe
was John
and anybody.
And anybody. That was crazy. That's insane. And Pete Fleming. He was another guy like Eddie Murray. You know, I just started talking boxing, and we haven't stopped talking since. And they just befriended me, and his family were just so great. You know, he was married to his mom,
Tatum O'Neal,
dad,
yeah.
Peter. They were just a great bunch of people. We probably got, we started at 9. What time is it now?
It is exactly, I believe, 11:18. Good doctor.
Okay. Oh, we guys have got a few more minutes. Yeah. So we'll do another 12. Make it a solid 2. I really wanted to thank you two for being honest, because I like I just knew you would ask the kind of question, because Rooney does this. You ask the questions that get me rocking and rolling, and
uh-huh.
And I want these shows taped because it's me talking about how you know a lot of these things happen. Mike Bellamy, the first African American quarterback in the history of high school football in Staten Island. And he asked me, he said, Doc, what was the first thing you ever got? And it was a Jim Rice bat. Jim Rice got a single off of David Getty, whose spikes I have, and not a finer human being walks the world, walks the earth than David Getty. Now, I really wish I could put this thing into a hall someplace, man, and people come and see it and have you all
it
as part
dog,
of my
Doc, it belongs
narrative.
In a sports, it belongs, part
me,
Doc,
it,
belongs in a, it belongs in a sports Smithsonian is what it belongs in.
I gotta try to find it. I remember one time I went to the Schomburg nobody ever got back to me. We know one of the David Getty. You know, I remember Dave telling me.
David Getty, old school.
He told me at the end of the season, you know, he gave me the spikes and you know, there he handed it to me. You know what I mean? Ozzie Smith, first bat I ever got from Ozzie is funny. Met Ozzie, and we're sitting there talking, and boom, boom, boom. You know, and great guy and everything. Ozzie told me one time he said Mel. He said, my house is so big, man, that the kids don't have to go outside to ride their bikes. They can ride their bikes in the house.
I like that. That's roomy.
He said, Mel, the kids have to go outside. And I asked Ozzie, is it possible, man, I could get a bat, man? And he looked at me. He said, hey, man. He said, it ain't my stuff. And, you know, show me your friends and I'll show you.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when he retired, I was in the locker room and clubhouse, and Roberto Vigna. And I'm just standing. He said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" He said, "You're Ozzie's guy, ain't you?" And Ozzie had retired already. You're Ozzie's guy. And we started kicking it. So, Derek Jeter,
huh.
You know, is a guy like Chipper Jones. They befriended me because Derek, you know, people watch it, and evidently he saw me talking to Jesse Barfield. He saw me talking to Don Mattingly. And I remember one day, you know, he just said, Hey, Doc, he said, I remember during the first year in the playoffs, they did take the pictures of him, and he turned to me and said, Doc, man, they sweat me. So he took me someplace, Doc, watch my glove for me, you know what I mean? And I asked him, I said, Doc, got a bad day? He said, hey, Doc, let me make a little bike. Gave me bikes, gave me a pair of spikes, gave me a bad day. You know, Derek Jeter is second to none. And
class
that's why
class act.
And Jesse Barfield the same way, you know, Roberto Kelly. Oh, yeah,
hey,
Doc,
let me ask you something, Doc, that I'm eager to know. Do you have anything in your collection from, I think, one of the hardest throwing pitchers in baseball history? Do you have anything from the Goose?
Wow, I was just thinking about that guy for you to say that.
I have Goose on the ball, and I have pictures of me and Goose. In fact, it's funny you said it at the bat dinner. Goose has come out and said, hey, Goose, how you doing? Hey, I said, you know, your man Rush passed. He said, what? I didn't know that. Yeah, I have a nice shot of me. Me, Goose, and Arthur George. Me, Goose, and Arthur George. Got a nice shot of him.
What about Ron Guidry? You got any his stuff?
I got some Gator around here somewhere. I got some Gator.
My father
Gator,
loved that guy.
Lightning.
My father loved that guy. Oh.
Nice guy.
Didn't one year, Lady A, Doc, he goes something crazy like 25-3?
Yeah, 25. Yeah. Louisiana Lightning, 25-3, 25-9. It was awesome that year. I remember Phil Rizzuto. Ah, look at him, White. He's pitching that day. You couldn't meet a finer human being than the Scooter. I remember one time, I'm in a press box and he's in there, him and White. And as I walk back and forth going up to the stand, I see he's got a button on, "Kiss me, I'm Italian." So, in between things, I run over, walk into the booth. Give him a kiss on the cheek. Holy cow, why did he kiss me? You know what I mean? But he was just a wonderful, wonderful human being. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being. A great Yankee. You know, ironically, you know, Rizzuto was working in the broadcast booth with the Dodgers before he came to the Yankees.
Really?
Yeah, I've read the story, and I said, you know, he got a job with the Dodgers before he got a job with the Yankees. Amazing. Mm. But only the only kind of stuff that you hear right here on Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports and Depth is the show, www.blake.com. Hit it, top box, make a donation here, DocStanleySports.com. That's where you can view some of this stuff we're talking about. I'm going through stuff here as I'm getting ready. I'm stunned at some of the things I'm finding. We'll talk some more about it tomorrow as we'll try to bring you another show because there's so much to say. But more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, is what these people have to say. I mean, you know, sometimes the obvious is right in front of you. Sometimes you don't see it. And, you know, Lady A, and I remember when C-Wings told me about you, you know, and lauded your beauty and all your sexuality, but he talked about your boxing expertise. And I remember when we discovered you, Rooney, when I don't know, you like just came out of the ceiling or something. I don't know where you just showed up on the scene.
I had the pleasure of being introduced to you by the incredibly great a boxing expert, among other things, the great Marion Boykin.
Boykin, out of nowhere. And me and Marion sat down and said, man, we're going to do a story about this guy. We really like this guy, man. We're going to do all we can for him. And, you know, the rest is history, man. We had, you know, it's not the longevity of one's life, but the quality of one's life. But, you know, to have longevity and quality, and you people have been, you know, I mean, Destino said something, too. He says, you know, I can't wait for Sundays, man. And, you know, I can't wait to get in the air. I thank Neil Blake, you know, for this opportunity. And, you know, time and time's worth money, but, you know, it's the education. And these shows here, I also asked Charlie to take them because of the education, the expertise, the history. Rube Foster,
well, Doc, as Lady A and I always say, Doc, big ups to you because even though you're modest as hell, we all recognize that you are indeed the straw that stirs this drink. I mean,
thank
you
so much.
You know,
I appreciate that. All that goes to the good Lord. It's what you're supposed to do, man. It's not easy sipping Cristal champagne, baby. It's not easy stirring the best drink in the house, man. It ain't hard to do, man. You know, and you know, it's not hard to say, okay, Willie, you go.
I'm gonna tell you guys something. It's funny. You know, we're sitting here, we're talking about that, and it's amazing because I was talking to my mother today while I was driving. And I said to her, I said, you know, one of the big things is, you know, I think since we're a younger generation than you, Doc, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, whenever we feel like complaining and we think that we got it bad, we just think about what your generation did so we could be where we're at. And it kind of minimizes all the gripes and everything we have going on. And if it wasn't for people like you, my mother, and your generation, I don't think that we would learn to recognize just, you know, exactly how blessed we are that we had people like you to pave the way for us.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Pave the way and lay the foundation.
Yeah,
lay the foundation. And before we run out of time, Doc, like a big up to what Lady A is saying. You laid the foundation to make our path a little smoother. So big ups to you. Big up to Mr. Neil Blake. Big ups to Ms. Deirdre Shuler.
Absolutely.
One of you making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, it's the good Lord open your eyes. And you understand, you know, you all are not cut from the same cloth. Because, you know, for you to say something like that, it shows where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
It shows your intellect. It shows your class. It shows your character. Because a lot of people don't see it. You know, it's like, you know, you got three kids and you hand them four pieces of candy. And one kid will offer the other two pieces of candy. Well, the other kids are putting all the candy in their pocket. I mean, you people are unique and special. I mean, and that's why you're here, because actually I haven't selected you. The good Lord sent you to me. I mean, I remember Rooney got left at the time. He said, Doc, I said, Rooney, but he said, Doc, you know, I mean, you imagine somebody tell you that you've helped shape their life. You mean somebody, you're in Brazil and somebody says, hey, Doc, we miss you. Make sure you eat right. You got to take care of yourself. We love you, Doc. That's Lady A. Money can't buy that. It's the kind of stuff, and that song says, they can't take that away from me.
Hey, Doc, before you go, I got to tell you this quick story involving Lady A, I'll be brief because I know we're running out of time. But this just shows, Doc, that the highest esteem in which we all hold you and Lady A. I remember we were talking one day, talking, texting, and I was getting on Lady A about stealing the show every week. So I said, you know, Lady A, if you keep this up, I'm going to turn the show from Sports in Depth to the Lady A Show. And Lady A texted me back, no, Doc is the man. always, with, in quotes, not as, no, nah, not.